coming to you live from beautiful downtown Norwalk, Connecticut. I'm Mike DePalma, alongside my co-host Danny Santarella. Tony D, a little under the weather today. Tony D's got to get on board with some vitamin C pills or something. He seems to call out sick a lot. I don't know what kind of contract he's signing. I need that kind of big. I haven't missed a show in like 3 years. This guy is once a month.
No,
we all get paid the same.
He needs to start watching the hockey.
Yeah, I think
he needs to come in here, separate his shoulder, cough, whatever he got.
Yeah, so we got a good show for you today. We got our my main man, Neil Lynch, calling in from the Hoboken studio. I think he's just joining us now. Neil, are you with us?
I'm here, brother.
Nice. Phone off, mute. You're on board today. I think it's going to be a nice, crisp show. That's because I'm producing. You know what I mean? You don't have any guests.
Yeah, talking in 2 hours.
That's right. This might be a 90-minute show.
Yeah.
So we got no guests, which I'm fine with, because I just like talking sports.
I consider Neil.
We got a lot to get to.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've got the big signing today in New York.
Great.
There's got to be, I don't know, a dozen or so like New York sports talk shows. I'm sure all of them led with Tanaka today, but we're a little different.
You
know what we're going to lead with?
I can't wait to find out.
The NHL.
Uh-huh.
We're the only show in New York that's going to open up with some NHL talk because we have the voice of the NHL right here, Danny Santarella. Now, big game last night. I saw it was 3-3 in the third period. I'm following it on my phone while I'm watching a bootleg copy of Frozen, true story.
Yep.
And so, you know, I'm talking to you. You're like, are you watching this game right now? And I saw, you know, honestly, I did plan on it, but that's just not, you know, so it's not in the cards.
Right.
As a father of two. So let's start with that game. Let's start with the Isles because you were excited about them early in the season. And they had that, like, awful stretch. And they're playing some decent hockey lately. So talk us a little bit about the game last night and then about the prospects of the three New York area teams. Who's making the play? Who's got a shot? Is there some upside?
Last night's game looked, I think, for the typical Islanders fan, like every other sickening game you're going to watch. It starts out just Rangers goal. Followed up Rangers going down to nothing. You go, my goodness, we're in the garden.
Yeah, right.
And it ended up being like 3-1. I think it was 3-1. And the Islanders just turned a page of like 1983. Like they just everything, rolling four lines. The D-men picked it up. Pullen made some great saves. And things started going well. The Rangers were getting killed today in WFAN there?
Yeah.
I listened for like 8 minutes. The guy's calling in, being a moaning about the Rangers. They didn't play bad. And no one ever gives the Islanders credit when they play really well. No one, ever. They played phenomenal for 2 periods straight and beat this team, which I think is a better team, and they beat them. You know, flat out, when they're empty net goal at the end, 5-3, lock it up, it's great. That's 9 of 11 on the last 11 on the road that they've won. And they're extremely young. And all they really need right at this point now is maybe another defenseman because of how well Poole has been playing. Everybody killed on the Bakov. Everybody said they didn't have a goalie. Poole was playing great. I think maybe one defenseman, it would have been nice if they could have gotten Delgado, who the Rangers traded in Nashville. But they played well. As for the Rangers, I didn't see anything in that game last night that would alarm me if I was a Rangers fan. Rangers fans are prone to this alarmist attitude where the sky is falling the minute they lose a game to the Islanders, as though the Islanders are like a bitty league team, and they don't belong in the National Hockey League, so everybody's all riled up now. They played well. They played hard on the puck, which a lot of times you don't see with them. They got some good goaltending. They had a couple of defensive breakdowns, led to some Islanders goals. But all in all, as an Islanders fan, that was the win last night that, for me, this season was like the win. Because they're creeping up. The East is kind of wide open.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't know what they'll do with their financial situation, but if they could get one, maybe, even if he's a second defenseman, he doesn't even have to be this, like, Shea Weber, Duncan Keith elite guy, just somebody that can move the puck. They're getting Drazdowski back, which will be huge. But I like the strides that they're taking. I've got to be honest about the Devils. I watched them the other day for the first time in probably, like, a week and a half, and they're a team that hasn't surprised me at all this year. They're right about where I thought they would be. They get some really good play. Schneider and Brodeur are a pretty good goalie tandem. I don't know how much Neil watches them down there. They're getting all this great play from guys like Jagr and guys like Ryder and now guys like Henrique, and those young kids are starting to come along and play well. And that's a dangerous team because of that veteran presence, that if they do manage to get themselves into the playoff hunt after the Olympics and everything, that's a team that maybe of all three New York teams might not be the best team talent-wise, I think the Rangers are, but that might be the last team you ever want to see in a playoff. Smart defensemen, tough guys, puck movers, good play up front, a couple of their goalies, which is rare.
Yeah, right.
That's a team I would look out for. I mean, I don't know what they'll do. They could have a 10-game stretch where they go like 3-6-1, but if they get one of those 6-3-1, 7-2-0, or something like that, 7-2-1s over 10, that's a dangerous team. That's a team we were just talking about off the air, like your Nets, that you might not want to see if you got in the playoffs. That's a hard-nosed team, veteran players. So I think right now New York hockey and New York area hockey is getting trashed a little bit. I think it's great. I've enjoyed watching every game I've watched over the past couple months.
Yeah. Wait, Neil, you're a semi-hockey guy. I mean, you've been, what has been your take so far throughout the season?
Well, I think it's been great to see Jágr's reemergence. You know, it's kind of odd to see him be the leader in the face of the Devils, you know, considering he's in the twilight of his career. You know, I had my doubts about Schneider stepping in and being able to help out, but he seems to be holding his own. The only thing that concerns me is that every time I turn around, they're losing a shootout. I think they've lost every shootout this year. It's nuts. And that maybe that's the – I don't know what that is. They just need to get more sharpshooters, I guess, outside of Jágr to step up. But, you know, I think they got one of their major defensemen came back. I think he's been a great help to them lately. But to say that I watch every minute of every game, no, it's not true. But I do keep up with the scores, and I have noticed that they do suck on shootouts.
I got to tell you, one of my biggest concerns about the shootout, and it has been since they installed this stupid way of doing things, is exactly what Neil said. If you see a team like the Devils that's struggling in shootouts, you see a team like Detroit, which I think has lost like 9 of them or 8 of them or something like that, and still they're like 10th or 11th in the East, it affects directly how you have to build your hockey team. And I've always said to people that don't follow the sport, it would be like baseball instituting a home run derby at the end of a tie game. You have to have some guys if you didn't have them already that can hit the ball out of the ballpark. So if you look at a team like the Islanders, I think the main reason they re-signed Franz Nielsen 2 years ago was because of the shootouts, because he shoots like 60% at shootouts, which is phenomenal. And you see a team like the Devils, they don't have those snipers. After, you know, Kovalchuk left, guys like Zajac and Emmichur have not been successful in the shootout. I hate it. So it's for every reason you just said. You see a good hockey club, like New Jersey, struggling in shootouts. The game should end in ties. Or go to like a 3-on-3 in overtime, another like a 5-minute 3-on-3 or something like that, and then end up inside. But the shootouts are stupid because you get a good club that gets penalized, and then you get a club that's not that great, like a Colorado maybe that has a ton of skilled players, and they're great to shoot.
Yeah, I agree. Doesn't make any sense. Even as a non-hockey fan, that kind of jumps out at me that you know, it seems like a specific skill set that your team might have.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily dictate whether you're a good or bad hockey team.
No.
You know, it to me, it's almost, you know, you can almost equate it to the overtime process in college football, where it's like you could be a great team, you maybe not have a good kicker, and that now all of a sudden it puts you at this awful disadvantage there. We have
right.
another guy who's like, no matter what, we're going to wind up with 3 starting on 25. So it kind of is like, you know, you fight for 3 periods, and then all of this comes down to a shootout. It's great for fans, I think, because it is exciting. And I remember when they went to it, I was like, this is cool. As a non-hockey fan, I thought I'd be all, you know, but – as we said, I think it was one of the first shows you came here, and I was like, you know, what the NHL gets right is that they cater to the diehards, and they stop trying to cater to the people like me, because, and it's just case in point, I thought it'd be really cool, like, but then I still don't watch hockey. You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. And who's going to turn on the game, a guy like you,
that
doesn't follow and go, oh, geez, there's a shootout.
Yeah, right.
Turn it on. I mean, to me, it's, like I said, it's home run derby at the end of nine in baseball. It's a three-point shooting contest at the end of regulation in basketball. It's ridiculous. It really bends the system a way that, to me, is useless. Just games, Doc Emmerich gets the great announcer, says it for all the time. Back in the day when guys respected their mothers and games ended in ties, that's what the game is. It's a hard-fought game. It ends. Go to the 5-minute overtime, 4-on-4, 5-on-5. I don't care. Tied after that. It's over. It was never a problem for 80 years. It wasn't a problem.
Yeah, right.
A problem. And now all of a sudden it's a problem. I don't get it. I just don't understand that.
Well, unless you continue, want to talk about hockey for the next
few
hours.
I want to know what you
but I want to segue that to the thing that's now going to be talked about until the Super Bowl, and that's this issue that the NFL is throwing around where they're going to get rid of extra points. And, you know, there's all these weird ideas out there. You're going to get 7 points. If you go for 2, you lose a point.
Yeah.
And I get the argument that, like, the extra point is kind of a non, you know, you make it 99.9% of the time, all that. But if, just like you said, if it's not broke, why fix it? Does it annoy you that much that everybody makes extra points? There is an off chance that they don't make it. It's happened.
Yeah, well, what you're going to do is you're going to go from a situation where they make it 99% of the time to a situation where they're going to make it 1,000% of the time, where it's just automatically given to you.
Yeah.
I mean, look, here's the thing. You guys know better than I do. The NFL is the biggest league that we have here in North America. It's enormous. Okay? It's a beast that can't be fed. Business is booming. Why would you make any adjustments?
That's what I mean.
Broke, don't fit. I don't understand. I don't have a problem with whatever they do. They decide that
it's not going
to
kill me.
It's a 50-yard field goal for 1 point. Whatever. I mean, it doesn't make any difference. You'll watch it. Neil will watch it. I'll watch it. Everybody will watch it. But why?
Yeah. I mean, major rule changes in the NFL, at least agree with them or disagree with them, they have some sort of basis. And you look at it like there's some sort of advantage to it. You know, the stupid goalpost used to be in the front of the end zone. Granted, that was a smart thing to move back against. You know, all of these crazy, like, injury rules they've put in place, you could disagree with them, and I think they've gone too far, but at least you're, like, trying to see the other side of it. This came about because Bill Belichick said it's like a, you know, you're putting risk of injuries and all that stuff because Gronkowski got hurt randomly. The idea that you have your superstar tight end on this extra point team is idiotic to begin with. Neil, you're more of a football guy than either one of us. I mean, what are your thoughts on this? Do you have a strong feeling either way?
I mean, I'd like to see – I'm in favor of this rule. I've never liked the extra point. I mean, especially at that level, maybe at the college level you want to keep it because it's still – you see so many misses, but it's an automatic point, so might as well just tack it on and you know, and then leave the excitement up to the two-point try or the additional point try. I mean, I really don't see this, you know, sending shockwaves to the league. You know, there are a lot of talking heads and pundits saying that, you know, what about the kickers? And I'm just like, oh, my God, really? We're going to have a sob story for a kicker because he doesn't have, you know, extra points? I don't know that his salary is really incentivized in that way where it's based on points. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to add another level of excitement to the game. I don't know that you'll see too many more tries, but you'll see more gameplay. You know what I mean? You'll see more plays. You're cutting down on time. You know, you're wasting time with the extra point, in my opinion.
It's not game time. I mean, the clock is stopped. If you don't waste any game time at an extra point. So it's
your time.
Like, Neil's time is important enough where you don't have the extra 30 seconds to watch that extra point go through. So when am I going to go to my theory?
Yeah, you gotta get. Yeah, I mean, you get a touchdown, you gotta go to the commercial, and then an extra point. It's like I'd rather just get to the good stuff.
You know my theory, and I'm jaded when it comes to everything. But,
yeah.
I always think when stuff like this comes up, and I have nothing to back this up, so I'm not saying it's a fact, but I always tend to think there's money driving it somehow. So I just wonder if it's a situation where you skip the PAT altogether, give them the 7th point. And you just get an extra 30 seconds of ads. Like, I mean, could it be something as simplistic as that where it's just like, you know what, don't put the kicker out there. He's not a real football player, everybody says, all that stuff. Don't even send him out there. It's 100%. No one ever misses, so we don't send him out. And you get to go to the ads faster. Could it be something like that? Because that's my mind. I'm such a cynic about everything.
It could be. It just seems like it's not something that needs to happen. I'm not even that against the rule change. But I honestly, if it happens, it'll be. I mean, I think the fact that they moved the kickoff up 5 yards is a bigger impact in the game than this. Like that actually, it does kind of suck that they did that. This is like you'll forget about it. You'll be like 5 years from now. Do you remember when you used to have to kick those extra points? It'll be nothing. It just seems weird that all of a sudden, like of all the things that are going on and like the legitimate criticisms we have about the way they call these roughing the passer penalties and defensive receivers and things that are real, genuinely aggravating the fans. I'm never sitting at a Jets game where people are just MFing the fact that I have to sit through an extra point. Apparently at Giants games they do because Neil's got places to be. He can't sit through that extra 30 seconds.
Yeah. I don't get it.
I just feel like I think we're moving to a point you're going to eventually see, I think, in the next decade that they're going to start rewarding teams with more points from a further distance on a field goal. So if you're from 40 and in, it's 3 points still. But if you're 40 and out, or maybe 45 and out, they're gonna give you an extra point.
the Canadian Football League.
Yeah, that's been floated around. To me, I think that would change the game far more drastically than people are thinking. And the arguments against it that I've heard, legitimate arguments, is stupid. Like, oh, well, this looks like going to do to gambling lines or whatever stupid thing like that. To me, it's going to impact you. Say you're down 4 points, right? You're down 24-20 and you're driving down the field. What happens if that cutoff is like a 40-yard field goal. Now you're down, you're at like a 15-yard line, and it's 3rd and 10. Are you going to have your quarterback run backwards to get past the 23-yard line to make it a 40-yard kick and then just fall down? Are we going to see that? Is that what we want? That's what I worry about. Like, that's going to be a legitimate decision that you're going to have to make as a coach. Do I have a better chance of picking up this 3rd and 10 here, or do I have a better chance of sprinting backwards 8 yards and falling down? Is that the kind of football we want to see?
Well,
just because we want to see 4-point kicks?
I'll tell you this. I'm no expert, but I do watch some CFL games. I have.
Oh, my God.
I really have. And I never.
Where do you catch those? Where are those?
MSG. MSG almost plays those once or twice a week. Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Edmonton Eskimos, Montreal Alouettes, and stuff like that. I've never seen that, so I don't know. Maybe that's in the cards. Why wouldn't they just go to something like PATs from the 20-yard line? Make them a 27-yard field goal or something like that, or make it more interesting. You know, if you want to go for two, you get 4 down from the 10 and make 2 points. I mean, something where fans would go, geez, we're going to go for two. What do you think? What plays are they going to call rather than what gimmicky little stupid thing are they going to call?
I mean,
I'm just saying the game's fine as it is with me. Neil likes it. I know you and I are sitting there like, we don't really care. We just don't understand why now they would do it. But I would say if you're going to do it, why don't you do it and get a little crazy with it and change it up, you know what
really?
I mean? Yeah, PATs from the 20, 4 plays from the 10 for 2 points if you want to go for two. Anything, you know, something that would actually be interesting to watch. That's all I'm saying. I don't know.
All right. I just like the idea of,
you know, it's one of the few moments, I think, you know, when it comes to baseball, I think involves a lot of strategy. I'd like to see a little more. I know there's a little bit of over-strategizing in football right now, but in terms from a coaching aspect, when you're playing with the points, you know, I just like to see a little more coaching in that regard, you know, as opposed to how we're going to get this first down. It's like, well, you know, we should go for 4 here instead of going for 3 because of whatnot. I just think it adds an extra degree of strategy that a lot of people will debate on Monday morning.
Yeah, I mean, it will add to a ton of talk, but I mean, I don't think you need to make the NFL head coaching job any more difficult. It's already the most difficult job in America, in American sports. I know you're going to say hockey coach because there's one selection, whatever you're going to say, but I'm just going
to... Toughest coaching gig in the world. In-game. Don't say in-game.
That's it. You get paid about $11.50 an hour.
That's it.
Cool. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about Tanaka. We'll get to some Super Bowl talk. We can maybe hold off on the Super Bowl talk. We'll get to some recap of last weekend's game. Obviously, Richard Sherman. We'll take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
They come from the earth, dirty, ragged. But inside is a natural sweetness that comes from being wrapped in the earth's embrace and gently caressed by the hands of loving fathers.
Whoa. This ain't no romance novel. It's just a sweet potato.
Nature's Sweet Potato. Now in McCain Super Fries. McCain. It's all good.
See, that's the type of production you get when Mike's behind the ones and twos. I give you some intro song. We come back to some music.
That was great.
I'm going to save Ragnarok to the end.
Yeah.
You do it up nice here.
Ragnarok's my favorite. It's the only reason I come in.
Just to listen to it. Sometimes I listen back to our show and fast forward to the Ragnarok ad. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Tanaka. I'll tell you this. I needed this Tanaka signing so badly because I was so sick of hearing about Richard Sherman, and we're guilty of it because we wrote articles about him. We're going to probably talk about it later on in the show. But I just need these 2 weeks before the Super Bowl, to me, are the worst. It's worse than everybody talks about February. At least in February, I'm like, you know, doing some baseball research. It's like I'm bad. Then that's when I really get into college basketball a little bit. I don't watch a lot of games.
What do you dislike more, these 2 weeks here or the day before and after the All-Star game? Or the day after the All-Star game, the day before the All-Star game. Isn't that the worst day? There's nothing on.
Yeah, there's literally nothing on.
You like that or this? Which one do you like more?
I honestly prefer the day after the All-Star game even to this.
Yeah.
Because it's just manufactured. ESPN just manufacturing stories to fill time. And then we have to listen to stupid Radio Row next week. We got Emmett Smith coming on to give his breakdown, but let me give the first 5 minutes about Snickers, whatever he's pushing. And we got to listen to that all the time. Now, you're not a big sports talk listener, so it doesn't affect you as much. To me, there's nothing more annoying than having them wheel up some old NFL guy to give his breakdown that we haven't heard of. You know, Joe Klecko, great jet. I don't need to hear Joe Klecko's opinion on this Super Bowl because I'm going
to
hear it a million times. So I needed this. I don't think there's a more exciting thing – like a transaction in sports than the free agent signing in baseball because nobody knows who they are. Most of the time they don't pan out. You know, it's like this, and especially when it's a pitcher that's like major league ready, it's not like.
You mean the overseas guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
What did I say?
Free agent. International.
Okay. Yeah, you get an international guy that's hyped up, you know, the Matsuzaka, the, you know, Ichiro of the world, like right. All of these things because, I mean, literally you have all these people trying, like, Grick, there are scouts over there that have seen him pitch and do all that. The majority of your friends posting on Facebook have never seen this guy pitch in his life other than YouTube clips. I mentioned to our friend Rich from Huntington, who was like, who do you think is going to be better, him or Darvish? And I'm like, I've never seen the guy hit. I've seen a YouTube clip, and I've read some scouting reports. I can watch a YouTube clip of Micah Beatty playing at Southern Connecticut. He looks like Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
You know, You know, so it's like, I just, these are so exciting because they could be so hit or miss. And they could take 7 years, $155 million. We all knew they had to do it. Neil, a couple things. Were you shocked that the Yankees were the ones that signed him? I know, like, at the end, everybody was talking to the Mariners and making this push. The Cubbies were not going to be outbid and all this jazz. So that's question number one. And number two, were you shocked at the number that it was so high? People were saying $100 million. It blew $100 million out of water.
I'm thoroughly disgusted with this signing and the contract. I'm appalled. It makes me sick to my stomach to see those numbers get thrown out for this joke. I mean, you know my thought on bringing international pitchers in. To me, there's no greater country in the world than America, and I don't think there's any better ball players than Americans. And you can call me whatever. But I'm telling you, we discussed Yu Darvish when he came over. I think that guy is a flash in the pan, and I think this guy is a flash in the pan as well. I think, you know, what's the price tag for a championship, Michael? Like, at what point is any of this worth it? Was A-Rod worth it because they won in 09? They won that one championship, so A-Rod's worth it? They're paying out the wazoo for him, and now they're going to pay out the wazoo for this guy? I can't stand this. Clayton Kershaw is an established pitcher. He's shown time and again that he is an elite pitcher, and I think his contract was out of control. And this is right along the same lines. I'm sorry, maybe I'm just backwards. Maybe I just don't understand the financials of baseball, but it's getting out of control. I just don't understand this. And so what? They win next year? Is that it? Is that worth it? He can have six subpar years. He can tail off like Sabathia did last year, but you can't complain then because you got the championship. So I don't know. To me, this is an absurd signing that he only had. There was only three teams on his short list. One of them was the Dodgers. The Dodgers are trying to be the Yankees of the West, and you know the Dodgers opted to give all that money to Kershaw, which you know he's not worth all that. I'm sorry, he's a pitcher, and that's coming from a pitcher. So I can't agree with this at all.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. When you talk about, like, I don't mind any of these crazy numbers people are throwing out because the teams are making crazy amounts of money. So that doesn't affect me so much. And the idea of, like, what's the price tag for a championship, for the Yankees, it's all about championships because all they want to talk about is their 27 rings and blah, 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 even though most of them happened before most Yankee fans were born. You know, they need that. And so they're willing to pay anything. I just am still shocked that they're paying time and time again this offseason for guys that are question marks. You have a guy, I mean, the guy was fantastic overseas. And everybody talks about he's got four or five pitches. I mean, you could look at press clippings from 5-6 years ago about Daisuke Matsuzaka, and just all you have to do is just interchange the name.
Right.
Look at his stats. Look what he did in the World Baseball Classic. He's got all these pitches. Remember, Matt Daisuke had a gyro pitch, which was went backwards like a bunny bug.
It was nasty on MLB 12 for the PS3.
Yeah,
I
mean,
so much at Fenway Park.
That's what I mean. Now, that all being said, I mean, this guy, to me, that's a risk the Yankees should take because they do need a guy like this. They needed as much as I'm a CC Sabathia fan, he's no longer an ace.
Yeah.
I was not a fan of them giving $16 million on Roby Kuroda. They have three guys on their payroll this year in their five-man rotation that are making $16 million or more this year.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be looked at as a top-five staff in the league.
No, I agree with you in the sense that I think it was a move the Yankees had to make, even if it was just from like a business standpoint or a marketing standpoint. Like, look, we let Cano go. We didn't pull that trigger, so we're going to do this. And I agree with Neil. Although I'm not having any stomach issues about it,
he said gooder in that.
Yeah, I know he did, but I don't understand because to me, and it's just my opinion, but I see it a lot like I saw. Remember those old contracts like NFL draft picks, and they gave these kids a ton of money, like Jamarcus Russell, and there's a litany of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And you go like this, you go, well, at least we saw them play at the highest level you can play at prior to going into the NFL. And Jamarcus Russell was one of the best college quarterbacks you ever want to look at.
Yeah.
So they gave him a boatload of money, and he obviously didn't pan out. When they do it over in Japan, and I don't know if you've seen that documentary about Bobby Valentine over there, but it's really good baseball. I mean, that's probably double-A, triple-A kind of caliber baseball. But they'll tell you themselves, especially the Americans that go over there, that there might be three big league players on any roster.
Yeah.
The other, like, I don't know if it's 25-man roster, but the other 20-some-odd guys are not this caliber. So when you see a kid go 24-0 with an ERA of 1.3.
1.27, yeah.
And you go, okay, that's amazing. If you or I or Neil did that, we'd be telling everybody, look how good we are.
Yeah.
That's amazing. But to come here and now in the American League East, in those ballparks against those lineups and stuff like that.
In that ballpark in particular.
Yeah, and then...
And the, what's got everybody to see is the guy said he's got a low 90 flat fastball.
Right,
so
and then you
look out
the length of the deal.
Yeah, and the opt-out clause...
100%. I don't know why... I guess they had to do it.
They had to do it. That's the thing.
But
they put themselves in the position. They had to
years,
do it.
Man.
They did it.
I don't know.
I just find it, and we got a couple callers waiting on hold, so we'll get to them in a second. I'm sure they want to talk about Tanaka. Nobody called when we were talking hockey. You talked about Tanaka, the board's light up. I love it.
So upsetting.
I love it. But the thing is, I'm almost finding it interesting his choice. If the dollars were somewhat similar, let's say the Yankees blew him out of the water, which they might have. I mean, the rumor was that the Cubs gave him an offer of $150 million. But he is, any of the other teams that were in that hunt, he was not going to be asked to be the savior of a, you know, if he went to L.A., he was going to be a third pitcher behind two absolute studs. If he went to Seattle, he was going to be behind King Felix, no matter what. He wasn't going to be asked to be a savior.
Yeah.
I mean, the Yankee fans are looking to him, and they're already saying, they're questioning Mike Renner, we're going to start an opening day. We've never seen him pitch.
I know.
He's going to start an opening day. So, I mean, it's a ballsy decision by this kid, too, to say, like, yeah, I'm going to get the maximum money, but, you know, when you look at dollars and cents as far as, like, taxes and stuff, he wanted to go on the biggest stage in the world and be that savior. Maybe that tells you something about it.
Wait till you see the difference between Yankees fans and Cubs and Mariners fans.
Yeah, right, exactly. Wait till he's 0-2 with a 4 ERA.
Wait till he lays an egg in the Bronx in front of 50,000 people and then see if it's like playing in Tokyo.
Yeah, all that turns out.
Cool,
all right, let's go out to line number one. I believe this is Nick in Norwalk. Nick, are you with us?
Yeah, what's going on, guys?
Nick, how you doing? You must be excited today. I know you're a big Tanaka guy, big Yankee fan. You excited?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited there. I mean, like I said, the first step, first hurdle is signing him, like you guys have been talking about. I mean, now he's got to pay out, you know. I mean, like you guys said earlier, we're on the hook for 7 years. You know, the scouting reports I read, he's a notch below Darvish. And Darvish took, a year or so to become what he is now? And they say that's basically what Tanaka's going to need to become a, you know, I guess if he's going to overtake CeCe as the ace of the staff. But, I'm excited. I mean, it's been a busy offseason, and I think it was more panic moves by Steinbrenner than anything. I mean, attendance was down, radio was down, YES Network ratings were down. I mean, and to top it off, the Sox won the World Series, so I'm, all signs pointed to that they were going to blow through the $189 million cap and, you know, make a splash and you know, Tanaka topped it off, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, here's my thing about, you know, Japanese pitchers or international pitchers in general. And you talk about, like, Yu Darvish took a year to really get, you know, his feet under him. And what really hurt him in his first year is his walk rate was crazy high. And
yeah.
I think a lot of that is, you know, that's a big difference between pitching in Japan and pitching here. These hitters in America, as much as we think they're all free-swinging guys, they're much more disciplined than, like, guys making the jump from AAA to the Major League. So you see these walk rates up, and it's not that, like, they lost control. It's that they weren't getting the guys to nibble on those pitches. And when you have a guy like Tanaka, who, from all reports I've read, really his splitter is his out pitch, you know, I'm sure in Japan you keep throwing that pitch. Or it's the same thing happened with Matsuzaka. Remember, he'd throw 120 pitches in 5 innings, and he wasn't doing that in Japan. And so I think that there is going to be that transition there where the major league hitters are not going to be chasing those pitches out of the strike zone, and he's going to be forced to put over this, you know, low 90 flat fastball weaving game.
Well, I mean, plus, I mean, I would be curious, so I don't know the answer. How many guys are you pitching around in Japan?
Yeah.
You know, try to preserve your inning and limit damage or whatever, opposed to how many guys are going to pitch around the state. Because the number has to be exponentially higher than in every lineup. There might be three guys that in a scouting report you're going, we can't let this guy beat.
Yep.
And in Japan, I know there's great players. You've seen them in the World Baseball Classic. Those are great, disciplined, talented players. A lot of them have a lot of speed. But how many big bats are you really pitching around? I mean, how many Japanese players do we see come over and just hit bombs all over the place? I mean, I'm not sure. So I'd just be curious. That's, I think what maybe hurt Matsuzaka in the injuries was those pitch counts getting driven up.
Yeah.
Because he's pitching in Fenway, like Darvish is pitching down there in that ballpark. And you go, Jesus, I got to be careful here. This is cool. Got to be careful with this guy. You pitch around him. Next thing they're in the fifth inning, you got 105 pitches, and they're coming out with the hook. Whereas in Japan, you go, he threw 160 pitches to start.
Yeah.
You go, well, why? There's nobody that can take him deep. Why would he do that?
Now, Nick, that's a question for you. As a guy who obviously does his research on scouting reports, and this goes against the Yankee way with the Java rules and the way they tend to coddle their young pitchers. This is a guy whose last start, he threw 160 pitches. And on top of that, the very next day, he came in and got the save out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
That doesn't scare you a little bit?
A little bit, but apparently they have been watching him for, what was it? I don't know what they said on the YES Network this afternoon, but they've been watching him for, scouting him heavily for 5-6 years, and they were at every home game last year. So they have been watching him and, you know, scouting him thoroughly for, you know, at least thoroughly for the past year. I think it was actually, you know, 5-6 years ago back they've been watching him. But, I mean, the innings is, like you guys are saying, the innings are different over there. I mean, they're not, he's how many real hitters is he really facing? I'm kind of up in the air about that. I mean, he's 25, his arm's good for 4 or 5 years. You know, I'll take it. You know, what else? You know, what are you going to give MacArthur 5 years and $85 million? I mean, I'd rather spend risk the money on a Tanaka than a Garza or a Jimenez or something, you know?
Hey, Nick, let me ask you a question. What is the stat line for Tanaka that would make it a good year for him in your eyes? As a diehard Yankee fan, what's a win-loss ERA type line that would make you happy?
Well, we're hearing he's got to pitch to at least a 3 ERA to be successful. I mean, he's not going to pitch to a 1-1-2, you know what I mean? You know, anything sub-3 would be outstanding. So they're looking at, you know, at least a 3 ERA and, you know, 15 to 18 wins maybe. But I think that's reaching far for the first year. Personally, I'd take, you know, between 13 and 15 wins and a 3-1, 3-2 ERA, you know. I mean, my problem is these guys are jumping him in right over Sabathia as the ace of the staff, and he hasn't pitched, you know what I mean? You can't just expect him to be the all-savior of the Yankees. Yes, it was a must-sign, and it was, from a business aspect and to fill the rotation, it was a must sign, but I'm not sold that he's the Yankees' number one ace, you know. So I'm looking at 15 wins would be a good year for him this year, you know. I mean, and maybe that's the threat.
Would you sign up, Mike, right now for a 3.75, 3.8 ERA?
Division,
no
year one, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. This guy gives us – I mean, I was going to say what the over-under was as far as, like, whether you – I would personally, as a non-Yankee fan, justify this as being a good signing. And in my mind, I was thinking he's got to give you 15 wins and a 3.5 ERA, in that range, and give you 200 innings. I think that – and then build off of that, obviously. But you're talking about, like, instant impact, because they sign a lot of these, like, older, aging guys, you know, who, they cannot afford to miss the playoffs this year and say, well, we got Tanaka's got to get his, you know, feet under him, and then maybe Pineda comes back in 2015. I mean, they cannot afford to miss the playoffs this year. So I think anything less than 15 wins and a 3.5 isn't going to get them there, because, I do like Nova more than most. And who knows what's going to happen with the fifth starter. At this point, it looks like they're going to surpass the 189 anyway. So it wouldn't shock me if now they say, F it, let's go out and get him and
like
Ed.
I like Arroyo. He wants to pitch in New York. He came on the radio and said he would like to pitch in New York. He didn't say Yankees per se, but he's an innings eater. We need if somebody's going to fill the fifth hole, we need somebody who's going to eat innings. And Arroyo,
and he's a guy who's in a hitter's ballpark and done successful. I mean, you know, anybody that plays fantasy baseball knows about this guy, because he'll give you a complete game one day and then, you know, he'll give up a bunch of runs. He does eat up innings. He gives you six innings every day.
He
pitched in Boston. I mean, he knows the American League East. I mean, obviously the landscape's changed since he was a Red Sox, but, you know, he knows what it takes to pitch in the East. But what I found interesting about Tanaka, there was a few more teams that thought that he was worth the risk. Apparently, the Astros made a big bid at him too. They didn't say how much they offered him, but I guess the Astros, the White Sox, and the Cubs were the one of the three of the four final teams in it after the Diamondbacks withdrew last night. So I guess, I mean, if a team like the Astros were going to throw $100 million or whatever they were going to offer at him, I guess. Scouts see something in him, you know? Still got to see him.
I'll tell you what I'm looking at. Honestly looking at not only the quality of the lineups in that division, the ballparks in that division, which are all hitter-friendly.
Yeah.
And on top of it, which I haven't heard anyone talk about, I'm sure they will, but the pressure of being a New York Yankee.
That's what I mean. This guy's got some balls to do this.
First time pitching here, obviously.
And to be asked what he's being asked to do. Anything short of those stat lines is going to be booed, and he's going to be a butt of the joke.
I agree.
And, like, you know, the other place he could have landed, that's just not the kind of, you know.
Look at the welcome they gave Kosuke Fukudome. They brought him in, like, under the cover of darkness because he was such a superstar. You find out he's, like, an average ball player. The star guy would have been, like, Tom Seaver in Wrigley. You know what I mean? But I can honestly say that I don't know any real Cub fans that necessarily were like, we've got to get this guy, because we had this discussion a couple weeks ago, Mike, you and I, which is, where are the Cubs going?
Yeah.
The Mets are ahead of the Cubs, and you've already admitted that the Mets aren't really anywhere particularly great.
Yeah.
So if they get him and pay him all this money, they outbid the Yankees.
Then they got him and Samara to the top, and they're starting to build something,
You know what I mean? So why would you want him? You got to believe that he knows what he's doing, even though he made a big offer this phenomenon.
Yeah. Well, then we don't know that, though. That could have come from Tanaka's camp where they're throwing out big numbers.
Apparently the Cubs were the only one to leak out that they went $150 million, but it was unconfirmed. And there was what boggled me was the Astros. When I heard the Astros this morning that they made a substantial offer, I mean, that kind of boggled my mind, you know, because they're – I mean, I know they've increased their payroll this year, but last year it was, a total of $16 million, I think, for the whole team, I think, you know? So if they were shooting the stars with Tanaka, you know, I guess scouts, you know? But, you know, you've seen the movie Moneyball, scouts can only tell you so much, so, I mean...
Yeah,
but
I mean,
like
the Astros are a team that actually did a zero in the ratings in one of their games. So, I mean, the fact that they're – and I don't want it to come off like I don't think this is a good signing for the Yankees. The number is the number. It's the Yankees. I don't look at – like they needed a guy. They needed to take a shot at a guy who could be legitimate. And the one thing I'll say is I've read a bunch of scouting reports. I have yet to read a report where anybody says this guy is not going to be good. I mean, the question there is he going to be good or is he going to be great? There's nobody, none of, not one scout has had the balls to come out and say, I think that his skill set does not translate. And so when you see a complete consensus of a guy, I don't see, you know, people are like, well, will he be the next, you know, Keigawa? I don't remember the hype around Keigawa. I do remember Nicky Roberts.
Not at all, no.
You can't compare the two. This is a guy where, like, the consensus is this guy is going to be good. You know, whether he's a two or a three or possibly a one, you know, whether they overpay and he winds up being a 15-10 guy for the next 7 years with a 3.8 ERA, granted, like, that's not great, but I don't see this guy coming in and just being still huge.
I guess it was the seventh year, and the opt-out clause was a must on Tanaka's side. That's the Yankees went into it. Cashman, I heard him on Yankees Hot Stove tonight saying they went in without the opt-out clause, and that was one of Tanaka's stipulations. So Yankees went back. Apparently they went deep. When they went to L.A., they went seven deep. They went Cashman, Girardi, you know, Rothschild. They went with seven guys, and they were serious when they went. And I guess that was part of the fun of this whole past few weeks, was how tight-lipped everything was, and everything was just rumor this, rumor that, Cubs this, Diamond, you know what I mean? And I guess kind of made for, you know, a fun week of, you know, speculation and all that. But, I mean, in the end, you know, let somebody tweeted out that the Yankees weren't going to be outbid, and, you know, sure enough, they weren't, you know.
Well, can I break some news here? I mean, you would think that that nobody could upstage the Yankees today, but they're cross-town rivals. They went out and did it. You know what they did? Matt Cerrone from Mets Blog is reporting. They inked Lucas Duda to a $1.6 million deal. So put that in your pipe and smoke it, Yankees.
Yeah,
man.
Well, yeah. Did they sign Ike, too? They signed Ike, too, to avoid arbitration, I read or heard, didn't they?
Yes, they sure did. They will not be upstage today. This is not going to be a day where the Yankees dominate the back pages. We got Duda,
you know,
and
I like the Cologne signing for the Mets there. I kind of almost thought he would have been a good fit for the Yankees. I mean, you know, he when he pitched a few years ago, I mean, he wasn't too bad there. But, you know, and then he had that. What boggles me with somebody like a Cologne, though, is he's had the PED connections. He had that great year last year, and, you know,
yeah,
you don't
know if it is
PED related or what, but, you know, I do like the Cologne signing there. I think that's a big plus for the Mets, you know.
It's a stopgap to make them respectable. Even as an optimistic Mets fan that I am, nothing that they did this offseason without Harvey there gives me any hope that they're even in contention in September. If they are, I'll be the first to admit that I'm wrong. But
a lot of people think they're at least an 80-win team now. And that's what they were talking about today.
I
haven't yet assessed every team and what I think every you know. But I mean, people are saying Mets could be close to an 80-win team without Harvey. You know.
What I'm thinking about. I mean, they won 74 games last year, and they got to replace Harvey, and they did that with who? Bartolo Colon.
They re-signed G, didn't they? I read that. Too.
Yeah, they did. But he was on their
and
team
he
last
had a
year.
Hell of a year.
Their team last year produced 74 wins. And, you know, they got a ridiculous year out of Marlon Byrd. And so they got Granderson, but if you look at what you expect Granderson to do, he's not going to do that much more than Marlon Byrd did, really. I mean, Marlon Byrd gave him 20 home runs through August. I just don't think that they're going to have this, like, big renaissance because they got Curtis Granderson or Chris Young. I could be wrong.
Granderson is going to become he's going to have a lot more extra base hits. And, you know, that year in Detroit that he had his monster year after before the Yankees signed him, he had an insane amount of triples, I think, that year in Comerica or whatever the heck the Tigers play in, I guess. And that's a big ballpark. But you're not obviously not getting that speed and that, you know, out of Granderson now. I mean, that's five, six years removed from that year, but. I like the Grant. You know, everybody was ripping on him because he said real New Yorkers were Mets fans and this and that. And you know, I threw away my Cano jersey, but I kept my Granderson jersey because, you know, Granderson's a genuine good guy, and, you know, I'm glad he'd stay around. I mean, being a New York sports fan, I, you know, not that I don't, I don't hate the Mets by any means. You know, I watch Met games, you know, here and there, and I follow the Mets. So it's, you know, good to have a guy like that, you know, that I respected as a Yankee, that he decided to, you know, stay around. So, you know, I'll root for him this year.
Yeah, it'll be exciting, Nick. Well, keep us in the loop if you hear anything. What's the Facebook page you're a part of? You're a part of that New York Yankees
Facebook page, right?
Yeah,
I bought that out there from a kid I knew there, so it's pretty much me running it there. But it's New York Yankees News on Facebook. Just search it through the Facebook site there and it should pop up.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll send you guys the link if you guys want to share it or something.
Stories, you know, it's comparable to the Mets. Well, honest to God, it's comparable to Matt Theron with the Mets blog, where you're getting, you know, news out there instead of trying to search the web and find stuff. You can go there.
I
recommend anybody go like that.
Free time. I appreciate it, guys.
All right. Nick from Norwalk. Appreciate the call, brother. Now, Neil, what are your thoughts about, you know, what expectations should be for Tanaka this year? I mean, Nick's expectations seem to be a little higher. I mean, he's looking for under 3 ERA. I guess if you're spending that money, that's what you're paying for, but I just think that's a little unrealistic. If you're coming over here, the adjustment, just the cultural adjustment is one thing. The adjustment to the competition is another thing. I think anything in the 3-5 range with 15 wins, you got to be thanking the lucky stars here. No, Neil?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the Rangers got out of Darvish this first year, with a sub-4 ERA with 16 wins. And, you know, I don't know. I thought they said that this guy is better than Darvish, but it could be wrong. He was putting up some pretty ridiculous numbers over there, but I just feel like for the money that they gave him, it's not going to be worth it unless he's a 20-game winner. I know it sounds crazy, but I just feel like unless this guy is in the Cy Young running this year, it's a bust. You can get a quality arm or two for the money that you put up. You could even get some offense, some good bench support. I just feel like I can't see it being worth it. You know, I mean, I guess if they win the World Series this year, then it's worth it, and then the rest of the contract can just, you know, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, go ahead.
I mean, you know, if he comes out and he gives you sub-3 and he gives you close to 20 wins, and, you know, his losses are down, and he keeps you in ball games for not just this year, but for, you know, next year, the year after, at least until they have the opt-out clause in that fourth year. You know, if he can give you four of those kind of all-star caliber years, maybe. I don't know. I'm really on the fence, and I'm very hesitant. I'm very conservative about that kind of approach. You know, because I've seen what happens, you know. I mean, especially with Harvey in the Mets, you know, we got so high on him, and then it's like, you know, now he's missing this year. Who knows where he'll be at the following year. So arms can come and go. I think it's the guys like Cano that they let go that is really just kind of bizarre, you know. I feel like you can pick up arms here and there that aren't that crazy expensive. It's the ball players from year to year in the positions that are gonna keep you in contention. I know pitching
wins
championships, but
yeah, that was the point I made on Facebook today. It's just amazing that, you know, they're willing to throw money out on a question mark and then let their one known commodity, who has been literally the model of consistency, unlike anybody else but Derek Jeter, as far as like a 5-year span giving you 161 games a year average over 5 years, 300 average, 100 RBIs, blah blah blah, like every single year. And Gold Glove caliber second baseman, and they let him walk, but they're willing to throw crazy money at a pitcher. And I think that the comparison to him and Yu Darvish isn't a real apt comparison, because that really is meaningless, because Yu Darvish was not a free agent. So what does it matter? I mean, it's almost like when we just always compare a black quarterback to a black quarterback. It means nothing. The comparison really should be, over the next couple years, what does Tanaka do as opposed to Matt Garza, Ubaldo Jimenez, Irvin Santana, and the guys they could have gotten at half the cost, or maybe less than half the cost of those guys. They might have been able to add two of those guys for what they wound up spending, $175 million with the posting cost. They could have bought two of those arms for that amount. So if he goes 15-10 with a 3-5, and you get Irvin Santana, who of those three that I just mentioned, I think is the best,
and he goes out and gives you a 3-2 ERA somewhere with 18 wins, then right there it was a bad time. You could have gotten him and somebody else for that amount of money. And the opt-out clause is only on the player side. The Yankees can't opt out of it. It's only on the player side. So only he could opt out. He does put together four ridiculous seasons. He's going to rip up that contract and say, give me an extension or I'm going to go somewhere else and go to the West Coast and make my money. So, I mean, the Yankees took on a ton of risk here. And, you know, that's the comparison. I think that the comparison to Yu Darvish means nothing.
Yeah.
If he's great and Yu Darvish is better, that doesn't mean it wasn't a good signing. It's not apples to apples just because they're both from Japan.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all sitting here and we've all admitted the fact we don't know really anything about this kid. You can look at YouTube clips. You can look at all those things. You don't know the quality of the players he's playing against. But in my heart, I just feel like my expectations would be lower if I were a Yankees fan. And I say that, I reiterate about the ballparks, the quality of the lineups, the pressure of pitching in New York, which people like to poo-poo and then people like to use it when it, you know, benefits their point. But there is a different kind of pressure of pitching in New York than Chicago or then, you know, Texas or let alone Japan, you know, where I'm sure he's a beloved figure and all those things. So I just think, you know, I don't know the numbers, but I think if he gives you a 3-8, 3-9, and he wins 15 games in his first year pitching over here in that division against this caliber of ball player he's going to see, I don't see anything wrong with that. I understand Neil's point. It's a ton of money to give him, and you need him with a high young caliber.
I just... I was setting us up to go to break, and I hit the button.
Yeah, that's all right. No, I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, I think it's a deal where a 3-8, 15 wins, first year over here, to me, it's not a bad year. Does it explain the money they gave him? No. But I don't think that's a bad year for a kid coming over here at his age, pitching against this caliber of ball player for the first time.
Yeah, I think you guys
have to
So let's just look at like a realistic thing.
Yeah.
The Yankees overpaid.
For me, it's 15 wins and like a 3-8 to 3-9, somewhere in there. Because of the division and the teams he's going to be pitching against most often.
How many is innings important to you? I mean,
not so much this day and age. You know, 20 years ago.
Without Mo and like,
honestly,
that bullpen.
Because if you're looking for him to be a CC-type workhorse, where he's going to give you, 230 innings.
But Yankees
like
fans don't appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, I love CC.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the innings.
And now
I appreciate the
limbs. Have you seen him?
I have seen him. I appreciate that bulldog attitude and the way he's like, you know what? I know I got 110 pitches in six. Give me the freaking ball. Shut up.
And I've given up four runs.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead
and attack. And you know what? Even if I give up another two and whatever we might lose today, I'll save us our bulk. But I would never have that expectation of Tanaka if he was pitching for my team.
Yeah.
Not in his first year. Not when you don't really – he's an unknown commodity.
Yeah.
That's period.
The booze are raining down on him. They're going to have to come pull him. They don't have to pull CC when the booze are raining down on him. Because he's like, I don't care. I'm awesome.
I'm just saying, I could be dead wrong. He could go out and have a Bob Gibson type.
It's a flip of a coin. None of us know.
I'm just saying what I think.
I can show you a Bleacher Report scouting report that Fernando Martinez is going to be the next freaking Hangaren. So we're always looking at our scouting report.
I'm just saying what I think would be good, while on the other hand, I agree with Neil. I agree with you. He needs to have a Cy Young caliber here to explain the money, but like you said, the money's done, okay? It's going to be paid, okay? I'm just saying what would be good if I'm a fan of the team, 15 wins, 3-8, 3-9, somewhere in their first year over here pitching in that division. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
If he goes with a 2-7 and he wins 21, amazing. Everybody goes, holy God, this kid's amazing. But I don't know.
I equate it because I like to equate everything to Mets fans.
Yeah.
And that Mets fans were like, this Noah Syndergaard guy is – untradeable.
Right.
And I'm like, when have you seen him pitch? And I legitimately get, well, I saw a pitching inning in the Futures game. Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
I saw a pitching inning in an exhibition game.
Right.
But we can't let him walk. And so I'm like, if he's got value, I have no problem creating these guys that have all the great scouting reports because I've seen a million of them.
Right.
And any fan, I'm sure in Chicago, you've seen a million of them where these guys are like, can't miss guys. You believe Brett Anderson, that center fielder, was the man. And he came up and had 50 at-bats and, like, 40 strikeouts.
Yeah.
I mean, legitimately, like, an insane strikeout rate.
Yeah,
and with the home run. So I don't want to hear anything about that. So, and I think that's an apple-to-apple. This guy's a minor leaguer coming up to the major. That's exactly what it is. Like you said, you're playing against double-A, triple-A, borderline triple-A competition on day-in and day-out basis and dominated. You've seen a million guys dominate that level of baseball.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. If you talk to former guys who made the big leagues, they will tell you that jump from AAA to the big leagues is infinitely larger than any jump from A to double A or anything. They will tell you it's like a punch right in the gut.
Yep.
It's a huge difference. Now, if Tanaka could come over here and be wiped out, he could be the next Tom Seaver for all we know. I'm just saying, I don't see that.
Yeah.
I don't see the lineups in the Pacific League in Japan being anywhere near what we even see from a scrappy team like Tampa, let alone the Red Sox or the
I guarantee you take the Astros roster and you put them in Japan, they go out and win whatever, how many games, they go out and win that division or whatever it is. And the Astros are a joke in Major League.
Arms with that, like 490 or
I mean, yeah. Altuve would be, they'd have statues of him.
They would.
He'd be unbelievable.
It'd be Sadaro, Ichiro, Matsui,
Altuve. Yeah, I'm with you. I think, you take that leap. Like you said, I mean, Tucci Lumber, Pete Tucci, who's one of our sponsors, he, first-round draft pick, made it up, made a couple 40-man rosters, was up in a couple of spring training. And he just said he's a big guy. People that are listening and don't know Pete, big guy, 6'3", 220, like not an ounce of fat on him. And he goes, you get up to the major league, and you see Brett Boone, and he's playing second base because he was in the Mariners organization, and he's as big as me.
Yeah.
And you look at it, he's like, just the size. Because I remember he said, you know, we played at the Cardinals, and I'm standing next to Mark McGwire, and he goes, I look like a 12-year-old boy. They did, but
yeah.
I'm just saying, that's just – to jump, and then he's like, down in the minor leagues, you might see a guy throw in 98, but it's all over the place, and that's the one guy you see. You get up to the major leagues, and you see just reliever after reliever, they just throw at it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he said that. He's like, and this guy had 30 home runs in Double A.
Yeah.
You get up to the major, and he never made a major league roster. He said that jump is insane, like just like you said.
I'll tell you this. My mom's brother, Bob Savarin, played in the major leagues. And he will tell you that the difference between A and Double A and Double A and Triple A is the pitchers are adding pitches. They're adding pitches they can get over in any count. That's his explanation over the years. So you get the Triple A and the guy's got probably three pitches he can throw for strike. You get to the big leagues, he's got three or four he can throw for strike. And his caveat always is, and you'll have hitters that can hit those pitches in any count.
Mm-hmm.
That's his biggest thing that he said, you know, I would struggle with breaking balls ahead in the count, you know, stuff like that. So he's a 240 hitter.
Yeah.
But Tanaka will be encountering guys, just forget the AL East, the AL Central and the AL West, and you're talking the best ball players on earth.
Yeah.
That can hit his 5, 6, 28 pitch repertoire, whatever it is, in any count. That's why they're in the big leagues. And you got a situation where just like Eric Hosmer might be the best hitter he's ever seen when he pitches.
Yeah, right.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, so who knows if he pitches great, he's going to be unbelievable for baseball.
Yeah.
He really will. Whether, you
it's
going to
be exciting. I think no matter what, it's unbelievable.
It's going to be
I'm excited. I'm super excited. Yeah. I'm actually excited in New York, even though I'm not a Yankee fan.
And the better he pitches, would you agree? The better he pitches, the better it's going to be for the game. I mean, it's going to be unbelievable.
The worst thing that can happen is if he's a mediocre pitcher.
Yeah.
It's either going to be exciting if he's great or he's awful.
Yeah.
If he becomes a 15-12 year in, year out pitcher, who's like winds up, you know, having a career where he wins 170 games, with 170 and 130, you know, with a mid to upper 3 ERA, it's going to be like, he's a very good pitcher, and he becomes Bronson Arroyo. That's the worst thing that can happen as a baseball fan. I want to see him either light the world on fire, and it's like must-watch. They start, you know, we're watching every Sunday night game that they're on, or watching them on YES, or you want it to be like an utter disaster.
I think he'll have moments, my blind opinion, where he's unbelievable. Where he throws like a 2-2 slider on the outside corner, the guy goes, I'm looking, he goes, holy.
Yeah, or he gets Mike Trout on the split, and he's like, oh my God.
But I think you might have him shaking his head when he gives up a 320-foot homer with the Green Monster at Fenway and goes, they don't have ballparks like that in Japan. You're dealing with great hitters, pitchers, hitter sparks.
I don't know.
We'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll get back to some NFL.
Hell Rock.
We're going to come back. We're going to do you serious. To kind of just, you know, we just sat here and ranted about Tanaka for the last 45 minutes. Take a call. We're going to come back. We're going to do some duty. You serious? With the Tri-State Sports Guys. We'll be right back.
Is anyone out there? This is the Nathaniel County Sheriff's Office. Is anyone out there? We were surrounded by the dead. They were in rioters, we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians. Out there.
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
All right, we're back. Please go to Amazon.com and check out Ragnarok Rising. Great great book. They got a gameplay series coming out with some playing cards and all. Go out and check them out. Just Google Ragnarok Rising and do that. It's R-A-G-N-A-R-O-K Rising on Amazon. Now, Neil, you got some good – now, last week you got a little racy. You know that. We went a little overboard. We're talking about punching animals, all kinds of things. What kind of duty series you got for us this week, Neil? I'm an animal lover, I said over the airwaves I'm going to punch my in-laws.
Can I tell you something before you start?
Go ahead.
You know, I got a text message from a friend of a friend, literally going, "Why would you punch a cat?"
I almost posted one of those kitten videos from YouTube on your wall.
Yeah, Neil put me on the spot, and all of a sudden I'm a cat puncher.
I got two cats. From now on, I'm going to bring them into the studio. I'll bring them down here. I'll let them sit on your lap. You'll be like Dr. Evil.
You see me get very teary eyes.
I'll have one cat.
Yeah.
All right, dude. What do you got, Neil?
I like to sit here and tell you that things are not going to get heated with this Dude, Are You Serious segment, but it's getting off to a pretty hot and heavy start with New York Jets tight end Kellen Winslow Jr. And you probably know where I'm going with this, but let's just say things are not looking up for this guy. He's been through a pretty rough season. He's arrested for possession of synthetic marijuana outside of Target in East Hanover. And, he's a man. He has desires. He was in his car in the parking lot. And, you know, he got to touching and to feeling. And witnesses say that he was, he was wrestling with himself, to put it politely. Now, I'm not going to pretend to be holier than thou and say that I don't explore here and there, but a car... If I were to do it in a car, I don't know if I'd go with a Target parking lot. You know, I feel like maybe the Walmart audience might be a little more open to that kind of behavior. But I got to get your take on this. I mean, everyone's got desires. Everyone gets heated and passionate. You know, you got feelings. We all got feelings. But that's got to be a low point for Kellen Winslow Jr. Is it the end of Kellen Winslow Jr.?
Can we rock, paper, scissors to see who goes first in answering this, Danny? Because
no, I want you to go first.
Well,
I just do.
I mean,
Jets.
It is a Jets. I guess I have to just bite my lip and just attack it head on here. I didn't know synthetic marijuana was illegal. I thought you could just buy it in the stores. I didn't know you could get arrested for that. So that was like the beginning of the story that we heard. And then this comes out.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's conflicting reports. Some people say he just was, like, had his pants down, and maybe he wasn't doing the horrible things that Neil was talking about.
Yeah.
And I will tell you this. Our producer, Matt, who is not joining us tonight, but he did get – so Michael O'Keefe, friend of the show, from the Daily News, he had an article that said illegal use of the hands. Witness told cops Jets Winslow was pleasuring himself in a Cadillac. Matt replies to the tweet and says, "Cops told Winslow, pull over." And he got a response to Michael O'Keefe. "You are a sick young man, but very funny, but sick." So even Maddie got in the action here.
Yeah,
this dude has had issues since he was at the U.
Most guys at the U.
They have some
issues.
What do you say? He's a soldier or something? A warrior or something. He got all kinds of trouble. And, you know, he's had just continue. I mean, world of talent. This guy's got continuous trouble. And... I mean, this is just bizarre. This is in the season. This happened in November, and in typical Jets fashion, they must have known about it, and they're like, "Well, we got to get the 8-8. We got to keep shoveling you out there, but you know, we get the bills coming up."
Do you have any idea how busy your schedule has to be to feel as though that's the only time?
Yeah,
suitable.
I got to go pick up some food khakis from Target.
Yeah,
and while I'm here,
might as well get jiggy with it.
Well, maybe it was like, you know what it could be though. You know, like when you're like in high school and you have like a mixtape you make for your girlfriend.
Yeah.
Maybe one of those songs, maybe like "Shy" came on or some, like, I mean, I don't know. He's younger than us, but like late '90s R&B, some early '90s. Maybe like Casey and JoJo came on and it reminded him of like a high school sweetheart.
Maybe
it just got him a moment. He was on his synthetic marijuana, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, trying to see the world from Kellen Winslow's eyes. Maybe there's a mixtape scenario in there.
Let me tell you, here's my image of myself as a professional athlete. Okay? As a shy kind of guy, maybe a little bit introverted, would be going to practice, going to film, doing my weightlifting, doing whatever I got to do, running to get something to eat, coming home, watching some TV, going over my playbook, and going to bed.
Yeah, you would get a game of PlayStation.
I would probably like four.
And they don't know that they're playing against Dan Santarella, right, starting left tackle for the Minnesota Vikings.
But I'm constantly stunned when I hear stories like this, which is like, dude, go home.
Yeah, no. His home is much better than my home and much better than your home.
He's probably got 28 bedrooms at his house in which to do this particular activity.
Yeah.
Or various studies or whatever he has, and you're at the Target parking lot. It's like, dude, you guys have all the money in the world. Extremely talented. Just go home.
Yeah.
Why are they not home?
I don't know. And get a car. The NFL provides
car
service.
Right.
I think that guy was just rolled. If that was happening in the back of that car service, the guy would roll that little, you know, plexiglass window up and say, "Have at it, Hoss. We got, we're on a, you know, it is what it is." I mean, Neil, what are your thoughts?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear those.
He was trying to get the Boston market, but got lost. So I'm kind of on par with him with the Boston market approach. You know, I love Boston market. It's good eats, but I mean,
love
you got to know how to use
real
your GPS.
There now, you go there and they sit down and give you a plate and real silverware, dude. At least they do in Norwalk.
Yeah, and I mean, does Kellen Winslow Jr. not have friends, or can he not at least hire one of his friends to drive him around when he wants to get high on what he calls quote unquote Mr. Happy and quote unquote Funky Monkey? I mean, the NFL doesn't drug test for this kind of stuff. He buys it on the internet, but I mean, I just think that, I mean, that this is. It's just pathetic. Like, this is something that I should be caught doing, not Kellen Winslow Jr.
Yeah, I honest to God, it pathetic is the best word for it because, you know, not that you ever feel bad for any of these guys, but, like, this guy, that's a low in your life in the Target parking lot. He was so upset he couldn't find the Boston market and get his little half chicken with a side of mashed potatoes and corn.
He had to do something.
He was like, how am I going to cheer him? All I wanted was this. I'm stuck with some Chick-fil-A or whatever.
Yeah.
Ooh, how am I going to cheer myself up? Well, I do have this bag of synthetic marijuana in my pocket that I got off of Amazon, some little drone dropped it off. And I got, you know, here we go.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Yep.
Me and my thoughts and some Casey and JoJo.
This is the first part. Dude, I can't wait to
say. Yeah, Neil, let's bring us to topic number two, dude.
Well, we're going to continue along the lines of indecent exposure. New York Giants running back David Wilson had neck surgery to repair a herniated disc, and he Instagrammed a photo of himself standing on the window ledge overlooking a New York highway, mooning traffic.
Yeah. Really?
You could take this one, because I had to, you know, tackle the first one.
First of all, I don't have the first clue about Instagram
or
any of that stuff. But like I said, I mean, I'm baffled by the fact that more people aren't just in their homes.
Yeah.
I mean that. I mean,
hospital, though, dude.
No, I know, but it's like, does anyone ever just calm down and just not do stuff like this? Right?
No.
Am I wrong? I mean, tell me.
I wanted to like this guy. Yeah, you know, I'm thinking, oh, cool, he does backflips and all that. But the more I get to know him, it's just like, damn, it's real hard to like him. Because you had a disappointing season. You're coming off a really disappointing season. You're coming off what could have been a career-ending injury. I mean, a lot of people are saying that he might not play again. And then you just had neck surgery, and you're up on a window. And this window, I wish you could see this Instagram picture. This is not like, oh, look down at the we're up on the second floor here. This guy is in like a freaking skyscraper overlooking the river. So say like he loses his balance, he falls out a freaking window in a near traffic and just perishes because he needed to moon people after his stupid neck surgery. I can't.
Let me
get behind that.
I don't think that those are operable windows up that high, are they? I mean, typically, they're not operable when you're talking those kind of elevation. We just did pull
listen,
up the we
listen,
pulled it up. He's got his gown on. He's got his hospital gown
yeah.
on.
Yeah, and
I will tell you this.
Make,
I mean,
like,
this guy's clearly
Final
an emotional
Destination
roller coaster.
Movies based on nothing. Like, this stuff happens. It's very coincidental. There could be a crack that they don't know about. It could be loose. I wouldn't do that on a third story window. And he's doing it up on a freaking penthouse. So I
could see like a pigeon flying into that window and then sucking him out, like Total Recall style, like the air sucked out of that building and he goes, you know, his eyeballs popped out of his head. But I'll tell you what, this guy's an emotional roller coaster. We know that. The guy waterworked on his first game in the NFL after he fumbled. And so he lives life on the highs and lows of his emotions, dude. When he's sad, he'll show you, dude. His cheeks will get wet. And when he's happy, he just moons the world.
I just think an interesting little thing here at the Tri-State Sports Bed would be Neil providing us with stuff like this, like a photo like this, and then we write the caption of what we would be doing
like
a professional athlete in his shoes, because my little caption would say, playing Scrabble with Mom.
Yeah.
I got to the hospital recovering from neck surgery.
Yeah.
I would be like, hey, Mom, you want to bring me some of that Minnesota soup you made and
yeah.
the Scrabble board?
I have my little 2.5-year-old curled up on the hospital with me
yep.
watching a bootleg copy of Frozen. That's what I'd be doing.
Talking about what a fantastic person you are.
I'd be talking right there.
Telling her right there.
I would just be telling my daughter. She'd just tune me out. But I'd be telling her all about the things, this various accomplishments I've had in my life.
But you wouldn't be doing that.
I could tell you right now. I'm a bitch on that. But, Neil, you would. Don't ask Neil. When this pilot takes off, and now I've actually gotten some, like, legitimate. We've got some ins in the entertainment community now I haven't talked to you about. I mean, this is probably going to happen. You're probably going to be a very famous figure in America by 2016. You know, not crazy, but like Ray Romano thing. And so this, you're going to be like Instagram. I could see this happening. We're going to, you know, you're going to forget about us and we're going to be like our former co-host. I don't even know if we're going to be allowed to talk about you. Probably not. But we'll just say this jerk guy on, on HBO out there mooning the, you know, West Side Highway. So Neil, I mean, you don't think you'd ever be in a state after you have a successful surgery, you're high on emotion and Quaaludes, whatever they give you in there, you're not going to be mooning, you know, the folks down in the East River?
I'm not saying that I've never pressed my exposed butt cheeks against a window towards some people, but that was ground floor. I think we're not picking up what I'm putting down here. It's that it's the height of his moon that is concerning me. I was a setting moon. I was low to the ground. That, you know, the most that could happen is maybe a bruised knee. This guy just came off neck surgery. He's going to break his neck again because he needs to show where the sun don't shine. And I'm just saying
that might be
that I'm probably
– You don't have a problem with the mooning. You just have a problem with height.
Yeah.
I think that's
yes,
the best
yes.
part.
Yes. If you can get him stabilized, you get a person on either side in and make sure he's secure, you moon away, partner. But it's the fact that you're doing it on the window ledge at that height, I just can't condone it.
So what's the highest floor you would moon on? Is it second and that's it, or just ground floor mooning is where is the Neil Lynch cutoff for mooning?
I mean, I'm on the seventh floor here in Hoboken, and you know, I mean, even if I'm sitting down, you know, if I got a seatbelt on or something like that. Or, you know, I got people, I got security. I don't know that I would do it. I would need to take the elevator down to maybe the second or third floor to feel good about myself.
Well, there you go. That's Neil's breaking point. So the over-under is 2. He might go 3 to get some cocktails in him. But after that,
yeah.
He ain't mooning anybody. Oh, yeah. I mean, I the idea of mooning somebody would not even cross my mind. Neil doesn't have a problem with the mooning aspect of it. Mooning is like, yeah, okay,
no.
But the 11th floor, wherever he's on.
He's worried about David Wilson's safety.
Yeah.
Not his state of mind.
David Wilson's butt cheek breaks this window.
Mm-hmm.
He plummets to his death.
Yeah.
And then they have a real void at running back next year in Giants. All right, Neil, what else you got, dude?
We got a guy who is – I'm not a lucky guy. But this student at Oklahoma State, this freshman, he's pretty lucky. And you guys will probably poo-poo it. You'll spit on it. You'll turn your head and you'll deny that this is probably one of the highlights of anyone's life, any young man's life. But maybe when Michael was single, he might have entertained the idea. This Oklahoma State freshman, Matt McGann, he went on a college game dine. College Game Day with a sign.
That wasn't even close.
Yeah. No, hey, you know, this tongue has had a workout today, and I'm just trying to get through it. So he went on College Game Day with a sign that said, here we go. Baylor's defense has more holes to fill than Lisa Ann. Now, the joke is Lisa Ann is a porn star, a female porn star. I've enjoyed her work in the past. She's very qualified for what she does. Honestly, you'd have to do what they did here. You need to freeze frame it and pause it and see it. The writing is not that great. There's not a lot of great artistic value to it. The style's not there, but the substance is there. The joke is there. I didn't like the design of the poster, but, you know, it got the point across. And apparently it got the attention of Lisa Ann. Now, Lisa Ann then reaches out to McGann on Twitter and then asks him to be her date to the AVN Awards in Las Vegas. And if you're not familiar with the AVN Awards, the Adult Video News Awards, it's where they hand out all the it's like the Oscars of the adult film industry. And she ended up winning two awards, Hottest MILF and Best MILF Release. So you guys are going to say this is horrible, but I think it's great. And, I mean, as low as Kellen Winslow Jr. is, now think about it. You have the lows of Kellen Winslow Jr. You just bought some fake weed on the Internet. You try to get to Boston Market by yourself. You have a tub of Vaseline in your center console, and you figure, well, here the Target parking lot's as good as any. And then you have Matt McGann, a freshman at Oklahoma State, who holds up one sign that's pretty good from a joke standpoint, but from a design standpoint, not that great. And now you're at the AVN Awards in Las Vegas. It's one of the top adult film actresses. Oh, man.
I'm only offended you think that I wouldn't think this is awesome. That's like I'm hitting the lottery. You're 22 years old. I mean, everybody tries to think of something, and, you know, on those college game days, you know, I watch a lot of that pregame stuff. And, you know, Corso does his puts the helmet on, puts the mascot face on or whatever. And you watch that. The idea that this guy, like that thing got enough traction, that somebody caught it, thought it was funny enough to spread it around the Internet, and it got back to the person he was talking about. I'd never heard of the woman, but I know what the AVN Awards is, you know, and listen to Howard Stern. And the idea that he got to go to that at 21, 22 years old is insane. That is like, I think your analogy was exactly right. If you want to talk about the lows being what Kellen Winslow is, for being some random 22-year-old student, imagine going back to school after that. Like, well, what'd you do over break, dude? You know, I saw my girlfriend. I went to, you know, Cocoa Beach, Florida. Oh, yeah, I went to the AVN Awards with some porn star.
Yeah, I think it's great.
And
I was just wondering, is it going to set some kind of precedent now? Like, these things are crazy. Now they do college game, as I'm sure you guys know, for college hoops all throughout the season. So you're on site.
Oh, it's going to be, yeah.
I'm wondering now, like, when they're in Lawrence in a couple of weeks covering the jail game, is there going to be some clown in Fog Island Fieldhouse holding up a sign that's not going to be anywhere near as cool as this kid trying to
And you know what? I think it could kind of work because if you're like the way to work that angle is to go with like a fringe actor on the field. You know, kick off to Jenna James for a second, but go to some, I don't know any names of any of them. Cause
sure enough.
I don't. Unless they're showing up in Disney movies or Nick Jr., I don't watch any of them. I don't have the time.
Right.
So, but whoever it is, some Sally McGee over there, and she's like on a fringe, you know what I mean? You put her up there, she's going to want to grab that spotlight and be like, look at me too. You know what I mean? This is great publicity for her. So that's the angle you got to play if you're just for all the 21-year-old college students right. listening. You're going to go that route. Whatever level Lisa Ann is at, go like a notch below. And get somebody that wants to be the next Lisa Ann, go with that, think of something more creative than just, you know, you got to come up with something new
right.
more than just how many holes you got to fill in defense.
Let's put this in PC. You think this kid,
Absolutely not.
No?
0%.
Zero chance?
0%.
Neil, what do you think? You think there's any chance this kid got lucky?
Consummated their love?
I think he probably got a long, wet kiss. And that was about it, because the way that they're kind of interacting on Twitter back and forth, it was like, you know, I mean, maybe you should give him, like, a nice massage or, you know, something cool where maybe he's, like, a striptease type thing. But in terms of, like, going all the way, that is not a shot.
Yeah, whatever happened, whatever kind of
affection happened in front of a camera. Because
yeah.
the only reason she did that was to make herself famous, more famous than whatever, however much fame she had. So when
right.
they're in that limo, I think she's got her face in her iPhone, tweeting or texting, whatever she's doing. They're not having small talk, listening to this kid, you know, mom's freaking, you know, pasta vajoule recipe or whatever they're doing. That's not happening.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. It's
you
all,
think that there's, I mean...
there's a possibility, absolutely.
So there's more than a 0% chance?
Yeah. I would give it a couple percentage points.
These people get paid. You know, you're the type of guy that goes to a strip club and thinks, this girl really likes me.
I actually never think anyone likes me.
They're all out of money. Maybe there was a transaction at this point.
Yeah, but I'm just saying there's...
This guy, his buddies, his frat brothers were like,
right, but
hey, we all chipped in $20. Now you're rolling in there with two G's.
Yeah, but there's very rarely in life, let me give you a little life lesson, there's very rarely a 0% chance.
Well, this is one of those instances.
I'm not saying anything happened. I'm saying I give it 1-2% chance. Anything. Maybe you got like a Kellen Winslow routine. You never know. Anything's possible, right?
Kellen Winslow. You got Kellen Winslow?
Yeah, maybe he did.
Can we
but
make him
by himself?
Can we make him a verb? Is that happening? All right, Neil. What else you got, dude?
Just as a side note, I used to work for Playboy, and I was a chaperone for Playmates when they had to go meet like sweepstakes winners and contest winners as part of the prize package. And like the cordial, polite, civil manner, and like in public, lasted maybe like half a minute, and then it was like they want to like talk to their boyfriend or like, you know, hit on that athlete over there. I mean, it's really kind of deflating for the sweepstakes or contest winner. Although there was one sweepstakes or contest, and she's not a playmate, but she did pose in Playboy, where the winner actually did get the round the bases. So I agree with Santa. There's never say never, as Bieber would say.
Reference number one.
I might not let you do any more Duty of Seriousness if you're going to just keep dropping in Bieber references. All right, Neil, what else you got, dude? You got a couple more? You got one more, two more? What do you got?
We got the doctor in Colorado who was offering a free vasectomy for Broncos tickets. Dr. Steve Broman of Fort Collins was offering to perform the $1,000 plus surgery in return for tickets.
I mean, look, if you're a guy who needs that, and I'm not saying I am that guy, but I'm borderline that guy, I might be considering that type of procedure. Yeah, I'd give up jet tickets for a vasectomy and Arby. They probably aren't going for a vasectomy. I might get a much lesser, I might get like a crown at the dentist's office for jet tickets. I might get a filling bill.
Wow.
I mean, not a bad move. The guy, you know, that's old school America, right? That's just bartering.
Yeah.
Cool. That's like
taking us back to Lewis and Clark. The free trade's gone.
That's like the purchase of Manhattan right there.
That's
Americana.
Hold on a sec. I'm a little slow. The doctor was wanting Broncos tickets, so he was willing to give someone who had Broncos tickets for that session.
You just gotta hope that
there's
80,000 ticket holders. There's maybe 10 or 20 that are looking to sell. So you got to hope. And that's actually 20,000 tickets, so it's probably most people have multiple tickets.
Yeah.
So you're looking at a pot of like 5,000, and you're just hoping on the off chance that one of those 5,000 guys is in a situation where he's got three screaming kids, and he's like, I need to have a vasectomy.
Honest to God.
That's a shot in the dark.
You just took the word right out of my mouth.
I hope you just randomly need this one procedure that I could do.
What is that conversation you have with yourself when you go home, you're the holder of these tickets, you sit there looking at the tickets on one hand, and your manhood on the other hand.
You would think that the stars are aligning perfectly, like your wife just said, like, I think it's time, you know, you get the procedure, and we can't afford that, honey. You just happen to go on your computer, and like the skies open up and light shines down on you. He says, oh, my God, I know how I can pay for this.
Takes all kinds.
I can get $500 cash for him, or I get a $1,000 procedure.
Yeah.
Does that delta, like, you know, did some guy just do it knowing, like, you could always reverse the tides? It changed there. You could always go back.
Even discussing upsets me on a visceral level.
Like, you say that because you don't have any kids.
No, I know.
You guys are both thinking this is like a disgusting procedure. I'm like, well, hey, it don't sound too bad. Neil, I mean, what do you think?
Are you thinking
along the same lines as we're thinking? Like, the idea is this guy was just on an off chance that one of the, 5,000 guys out there selling their Broncos tickets. But what if you're a scalper, though? These guys are typically counting their luck. Yeah. They don't care. You can then take that, put that on the open market.
Let me ask an honest question for you and Neil. Because I don't know the answer. Are there doctors that they just give vasectomies? Don't they do other procedures? Wouldn't you give the ticket holder an option? Don't they do, vasectomies and they'll also, clean your colon out for you or something?
They might. I don't know. I don't know the doctor you go see for that. We got to Google it. You should know that. But I don't know what that doctor is called. Is that your,
I don't know. I'm just wondering. If I have the tickets and I don't need a vasectomy, I'm wondering, I could use a little lipo or maybe
something. Give me
stuff.
Something.
Yeah.
A little nip and tuck.
Yeah.
Neil, what are your thoughts?
Well, you can reverse it, right?
I think you can, but I'm not 100% sure.
Because my thought is, you could just go hog wild for, a weekend and then just get it, redone on Monday, if you happen to be, if you got a bunch of, Super Bowl tickets the next weekend, maybe.
But even in that instance, you're just hoping that that guy is now hoping he's going to just meet up with a bunch of girls that are just saying, well, the guy said he's got a vasectomy. I think that anything goes there. That guy's an even luckier guy. That's even a more off chance. If you think you're just going to have this party weekend where these girls are going to be falling all over you because you could show them your vasectomy scar.
It's just like, hey, no worries here. Just,
anything goes. For your dive, brother. All right,
last
you
one. Last one. Minor league hockey team from Bakersfield, California, the Condors. I love minor league hockey promotions. I think out of all the minor league systems, hockey might have the best. They had a Undie Sunday where fans can throw their underwear on the ice for charity.
Male and female?
Male and female. I mean, they're only accepting new underwear, which is kind of puts a damper on the whole shock value of these kind of things. But
that takes the whole fun out of the whole thing.
Yeah.
You come in there and just bring an unopened pair of, Joe Boxers in there or some Kirkland brand Costco-style, boxer briefs. That's a little weak. The idea was borderline cool until you told me that. Nah, I mean, I thought it was kind of cheesy. Now it's even worse.
Yeah, I mean, when the team scores their first goal, fans are encouraged to chuck their underwear. I mean, here's where it gets interesting. I've had a pretty extensive collection of boxers. Can you? Well, the plan was to get the vasectomy and then go to Undie Sunday, but it looks like I don't know. my whole weekend ruined.
If the guy had a package deal, a little Groupon for the both, then you go.
Now, have you ever had novelty boxers? Remember Joe Boxer was really huge, back in the day. It was just, you got a little peekaboo happy face on your downstairs parts. Is that something you go for? I know that I've had an interesting collection of boxers, but I figure, Dan Santarella is a straightforward, tidy whitey's kind of character.
Where would you even get that?
You guys never even met. That's what I love about
it. What's wrong with this? I'm the old-fashioned guy, right?
Yeah, of course.
That's one of the things I hate about minor league sports, stuff like that. It's a cool little novelty thing, you're going to throw your underwear on the ice. I hate it in minor league baseball. There's, a cow chip tossing contest at the end of, an Iowa Cubs game or something. And I hate it the most in hockey because I feel like most people go to the minor league hockey game to see crap like this and fist fights. And all that does, in my opinion, is perpetuate the idea that hockey is this hokey sport. That's my thought on it. So, I understand it's okay to get people to come to the rink, throw their undies on the ice and whatever. But the fact of the matter is I'm pretty sure that's an ECHL game, Neil, or it's double A hockey roughly. It's not the AHL, but that's really good hockey. That's better than any college hockey you're going to see. and you're going in to throw underwear on the ice.
You know what's interesting is we have a right in our back door, we've got a minor league hockey team, Bridgeport Sunfire, and their feeder system for the Islanders, right?
Correct.
You've been at games?
Yes, I have.
I've been to a bunch, and I never see those gimmicks there. I've been to a bunch of games. I've probably been to a dozen of those games.
But that's why I threw in the fist fights. I think
well, there's a
most
ton of
people
fights.
Go to minor league hockey because there's infinitely more.
I think I told you off air that kind of turned me off. The first time I went to it, they came into the third period. And literally they dropped the puck and two guys just started fighting. And I'm like, that's just phony to me.
Yeah.
It's just like stage, like WWE. It's like stage, like, all right, you want to fight? You want to fight? Okay, cool. And it's like, I don't know. To me, that seems phony because if you really are a minor league player looking to go to the next level, is that going to help you get there?
It actually does.
It does? If you could fight? Do they watch fight tape?
It actually does.
They watch fight tape.
You saw the couple of fights this past week.
Yeah.
Like five
we'll talk about that
with five of the guys involved in those fights in a couple different fights in different
they were known around
were minor league call-ups. They're called up because they knew they were going to
so
have
the coach calls this guy will throw hands.
Well, yeah, I mean, plus you have more flexibility roster-wise than you have in, like, MLB. I mean, you don't have to, like, drop a guy off 40-minute put him through waivers. I mean, you can get guys up and down with two-way contracts, and these teams do it. And it's – I mean, I wrote the article today, SportsCenter.com, about my thoughts on stuff like this, and I hate –
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not hating what Neil's talking about with underwear. I hate the idea that people go to a rink and, God forbid, bring their kids to it to see some of the crap you see in minor league hockey.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about underwear, but I'm talking about there's people that want that stuff. There's people that want stupid T-shirt giveaways that say stupid hockey slogan. And then there's people that go to see two guys beat the snot out of each other instead of appreciating that, like, these are some of the best hockey players on earth.
Yeah.
And going there to see that. That's all I'm saying. I know I'm old.
Well, I get that. But I get that because a lot of people, you live in a New York area, to get Ranger tickets is hard
very
and it's
hard.
Crazy expensive.
Yep.
And then you get there and it's crazy expensive. So, we're 15 minutes away from the Bridgeport Arena. And so if you are a dad of a young hockey player, you would want – I get your point. You'd want to go and see good hockey.
Right.
And not like, and it almost diminishes the game when you're like, your son asks you, like, why do we have to do these cheesy things?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, how do you answer that?
I don't know.
Neil, how are you going to answer that with your kids when you go to a cheesy hockey game and you're a hockey fan? You say, why do they got to do these gimmicks? Why do the Chicago White Sox have to wear shorts?
If my kid asks that, I'm going to cherish it and I'm going to probably – depending on his age, skew towards the story about mythical creatures or, stuff that's made of fables, something that is just completely be so long-winded and so absurd that he'll probably lose concentration halfway through and forget he ever asked the question. That's my goal.
I think you just jump right into the birds and the bees talk and just, I don't care what age he is, just to give a long-winded, like, you want to ask daddy weird questions, I'm going to give you weird answers.
Yeah. So in short, Dan Cinerella does wear tidy whities. Was that the roundabout answer or no?
He wears them in studio, dude. You're never in studio. You don't know. He just rocks them out, dude. He pulls them off. I'll tell you what. You know what you want to talk about gimmicky boxers? You know what was, like, gimmicky for me when I was, like, in, I guess it was high school. Maybe it was borderline high school, college, with silk boxers. You guys ever wear silk boxers? Neil definitely has.
My dad had a pair once, and I threw them on. It was just like, it was heaven.
It was heaven for the first, like, if you're, like, just going to wear the silk boxers, that's fine. You spend a day in silk boxers. It is the worst day of your life. It's awful. They find crevices to get into that you didn't think you had on your fit body. And it's just, I honestly think there's nothing worse. Like, if you're going to go on a date or, like, go out to, like, a club and dancing, the idea you're wearing silk boxers is the worst idea you could make, if there's any young listeners out there. And, Neil, do you agree with that? They're great if you're just like, I'm going to slip on a pair of, silk boxers and sit on the couch and watch a movie. If you have to do anything active at all, do not wear silk boxers.
Yeah, it's strictly for display, just kind of just strolling around the house. Not for active
wear. I wore them to high school and had to go to gym class, and that's fourth period. Remember, imagine those the final three periods of my day. I think I sat out of football practice that day. I said, Coach, I'm out. I got things I got to deal with. I got to go to Target.
Yeah.
All right, well, Neil, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit of the NFL.
with Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out as always, tristatesportsguys.com, facebook.com/tristatesportsguys, or on Twitter @tristate_sports. We'll be right back.
These days, my dollar just doesn't go as far. In my car, it gets me about 6 miles. On my cell phone, maybe 4 minutes. But at McDonald's, my dollar gets me through the entire day. From sausage McMuffin with egg for breakfast to a tasty double cheeseburger. Thanks to McDonald's Dollar Menu, my dollar gets me right where I want to be. Satisfied.
Now, in the business, that's what they call producing, right there. You come back with a song, get people fired up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, hopefully Tony D is looking at home and saying, how is he doing that?
Yeah.
Talking about intelligently about silk boxers and the rest, vasectomies, and then just pulling off a comeback song.
Well, he knows your culture and intelligence.
He knows
what I got. Every week.
I sure do. I send him a text to let him know. It's like a little reminder. I put it in his Outlook calendar.
Can we talk about it, though?
I can't wait. I know. That's definitely the only New York show that it's now Wednesday at 9:35, and we have not talked about this weekend's game. But, you know, I was happy personally because, you know, I got banged pretty bad on our Facebook page, on our website for my 0-4 performance last week. But I think the game's kind of panned out a lot like I thought they would. I thought that that would be the early game would be a little anticlimactic, which it was. You know, I mean, the Broncos pretty much controlled most of that game and, you know, won it by double digits. And the second game was going to be a dogfight, and it was. And it came down to, you know, plays in that game, and I was very confident in myself when they got that ball and they were down on the one-yard line, and then they can't punch it in, and, you know, frustrated the hell out of me when Seattle did all that. But, I mean, what was your take on both of the games? Any surprises there? I mean, was there anything that happened that you're like, man, I can't believe that, you know, Brady. The only surprising thing for me was Brady did seem a little bit impacted by the light air because he missed several downfield passes that, you know, like Eli Manning, I always say, never misses those passes. When Brady has a guy, whether it's Edelman or anyone else, running down the field and he's open, he gives them a chance to catch the ball, and he overthrew a couple of them.
Yeah.
And that surprised me. That, you know, I know that obviously the air impacts that, but it did surprise me that he didn't get his work in and adjust to that.
Yeah, I can honestly say that the only thing that surprised me the whole weekend was watching Tom Brady, was watching the pressure that was applied to him by that Denver front, and seeing him really for one of the first times. I know you guys watch more NFL than I do, but seeing him look borderline uncomfortable at times with that Denver front. And I never expected, I know Mike had said it, that he saw kind of like a runaway there in the Broncos' favor, but I never saw that coming. And so I don't know how you feel, Neil. I'm going to turn it over to you, but I kind of watched that shaking my head a little bit at times going, it almost looked like they didn't even watch any film. I mean, that's how it looked to me, Neil. Did it look anything like that to you?
Yeah, but I think that Denver really rallied. You know, I feel like they had the emotional capital and, you know, they just were playing like everything was at stake, you know, and I think they really rallied around Peyton Manning and the defense stepped up, specifically the interior of that Broncos defensive line. The push that they got on the pass offensive line was tremendous, and, you know, the running backs had nowhere to go. There were just no holes available. And, you know, and obviously, yeah, Brady's play was subpar. And, you know, you can see that when you get pressure on him, he gets rattled. I mean, it happened to him in the two Super Bowls against the Giants. It's a matter of getting in his face and getting your hands up, and the Broncos were able to do that. And I'm really surprised by how their defense was able to step up and put the smack down on the Patriots.
Yeah, I tell you, dude, I watched both games in their entirety. I was really amazed by that Denver defense. I had not seen them play a lot. I'm sure nowhere near as much as you and Mike had. But the thing to me was, and I don't know if I'm out of bounds with this, it's almost like since that whole Spygate thing, I mean, the Patriots don't seem to do it. I mean, do you put any stock in that? I don't hear anyone talk about it. It almost looks to me like the Patriots get a pass for that. But in some of these games, I know they've made Super Bowls and things like that, lost to the Giants twice. But I almost wonder, like, was, because I used to give Belichick all the credit in the world. Like, he's the greatest coach in the world. It turns out they knew what was coming at the time. Do you put anything into that, or it's just Denver outplayed him, or there's no residual effects you see from any of that stuff now that they don't have inside information?
No, I mean, if anything, you might say that, that you know, the team as a whole has kind of rested on its laurels, and they released players that maybe they shouldn't have, you know. And obviously, Pat Sims appointed Tlaib getting hurt right off the bat, you know, calling Welker's pit play a dirty play, and Tlaib was a major impact player for that Pat's defense. And, you know, the Broncos didn't run away with anything offensively because of Tlaib's absence, but you could definitely notice there was something missing on that side of the ball. So, you know, I really can't attribute too much to Spygate. You know, I think, as much as the Broncos dominated, or, you know, as close to dominating as you can get without actually dominating, Pat still had a sliver of a chance heading down the stretch. Like, if they get that two-point conversion, you could sense the momentum swinging. You could sense that maybe the Broncos would start panicking. So I think the two-point conversion towards the end was huge.
Yeah, I got a little bit of a sense that game could possibly turn into the Niners-Carolina game from the week before, where Carolina really dominated that first half of that game. Yardage-wise, time of possession, everything, but they only had that little small lead, and they weren't able to really distance themselves. And I knew at halftime, like, I know, you know, and I had taken Carolina, but they, you know, I was like, this is not shaping up that way because, you know, they had every opportunity to put it away. And I got that sense in somewhat with Denver, and that was what was frustrating. I mean, you get Peyton Manning for 400 yards and the rest, and yet they're only able to put up 26 points. Is that what it was?
I'm sorry.
26-16, I think. So, you know, I see what you're saying. I mean, once they scored there, I was definitely worried a little bit that, you know, my prediction and my greenbacks weren't going to hold up. But I kind of worry about that for the Super Bowl. We'll go over the Super Bowl next week. But I think that's somewhat been a storyline with the Broncos, as weird as it sounds, is there's a lot of times where they've dominated games and they haven't really pulled away. Like, the score doesn't indicate how much they dominated. You know, they put up these crazy numbers, but it could have actually been more. And I know they broke all records for yardage and scoring and all that, but it could have been more. And you look at, you know, how much they dominated different aspects of games, and usually you could just look at total plays, time of possession, yardage, and you say, oh, this game's a blowout. You look and like, oh, they won by 6 points. Kind of weird.
What did you two make Welker's little pick there on Tlaib, who's a jump off, by the way? What did you think about that? Because to me, it didn't look like he was seriously running any kind of route.
Well, they do it all the time. I think it's embarrassment that Bill Belichick would call that dirty play because that's their move.
Right.
I mean, that's like what they – so
did you think that was intent?
Oh, I don't think it was intent to injure, but there's –
getting
his way. I mean, because as a Jet fan, I've seen the Patriots do that forever. So that's why it's such a joke.
How do you get away with that, though? How do you get away with, like, to me, as an amateur NFL guy, it doesn't even look like he's doing anything. Usually to me, like at least in college games, it looks like they're trying to run a slant route or an in route.
They throw their hands up or something. They call that play a decent amount, the offensive pass interference on that little pick route. But not enough. I mean, because it happens a lot. And you see it in Denver a ton, but you used to see it in New England all the time.
Because
they love throwing, they love working inside the hash marks with those little pick plays and stuff. They love that. And so I think that it's just like the pot calling the kettle black that Belichick would even come on air and say that.
It's a joke. Isn't it, though? I mean, teams do things. Mike Krzyzewski knows that. He'll cry about officials, and his team mugs more guys than anybody on earth, you know? So it's almost always the ones that do it the most.
My father used to always say, the people that will accuse you of being a liar are usually liars in their own home. They always says that. You know, the girlfriend that accuses you of cheating is probably cheating on you. That type of thing. Because they have their own little... So the fact that he would come out publicly and say that, shut up. You're going to get your stupid elimination of the point after, you know, run away and say you're great, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think, Neil? I mean, none of that surprises me. It happens all the time with him. I don't think it's an intent to hurt anyone, but that's just the play that they run. And I think he was out of position to try to feign like he was, like his job was clearly to screen Tlaib. and he was kind of out of position in that instance, so he had to, like, just make a play to get in his way, and it was unfortunate. I don't think it was
From what I saw, I mean, you can tell when someone is trying to pretend like they're picking someone. This one, it's like Walker just—he kind of got caught, you know, in between. He didn't know which way to go with Tlaib, and they just ended up colliding. I mean, I don't think that it was like him deliberately laying a shoulder into Tlaib's hip or whatever. I think he legitimately was trying to cross Tlaib's face, didn't know that he was going to be that shallow, and just ended up, you know, and colliding. Maybe because it was Welker that Belichick thinks that. If you had Decker doing that, would anyone be talking about it right now? I don't know.
Well, if it was Decker, Tlaib would be dead. I think that's a monster.
Yeah.
And with the mere time, he would be dead. Our whole show would be in remembrance of Aqib Tlaib. We would have dedicated to him.
I just looked at it, like I said, and I go, he's not even trying to do anything. I mean, to me, that's what would be upsetting.
But you don't watch no better film than that happens in every game.
Yeah, I mean, but like I said, in college, you tend to see it more. First of all, you don't see it as much, but you tend to see it be more of guys trying to run a slant route, and he clips a guy with his tail and knocks him off. Florida State did it 3 or 4 times against Auburn, where they had Kelvin Benjamin running a route and clipped linebackers because he's 6'5", 240, you know what I mean? And there's just more of a concerted effort to make it look good. I just saw it as, like, boy, Tlaib looked like he got blindsided
by
a little tiny breakthrough.
The more surprising thing is Wes Welker has done that play 100
times.
With the and so it was surprising he executed it so poorly. You know what I'm saying? Like, to me, that was the bigger surprise.
Yeah.
Like, you made a career doing that. That's
That's
how you got catches from somebody else rubbing the guy, and that's how, you know, what you added value when you got into this league with, you know, Miami and the rest. Like, that's how you get that happens. And the fact that he was that bad at his job on that play almost surprised me more, because he's probably done it as many times as anybody in the league.
Yeah.
That surprised me a little bit. But you know what I want to ask you about – well, I'm going to ask Neil, because – and we'll get into the game, the late game. But you're the only one, Neil, that didn't really chime in on the Richard Sherman comment. You know, we had Dave Giordano, who writes, you know, random articles for us here and there, pointing out that apparently Richard Sherman won a long jump in Norwalk, Connecticut, at some point, which was fantastic. Test the field. I didn't remember that from 06, which is pretty great, put Norwalk, Connecticut on the map. But, you know, and I wrote my article about role models and, like, the idea that he's, like, people are just making this out like the end of the world because of what he did, and that we should have – looked at him as a role model anyway. It's stupid. And Dan wrote his article about, you know, why he's rooting for the Broncos, not necessarily for Sherman, made a comment about Sherman. And, Neil, you didn't really chime in on the Sherman comments after the game. So, you know, not to put any words in your mouth, but what are your thoughts about what he did after that game? It's really what took away from the weekend is what he said.
I mean, I don't understand the backlash. I really don't. I mean, I can see why 49ers fans would be upset with him going over to Crabtree and smack his butt and trying to shake his hand, and then making the choking signal, which that anytime someone makes a choking signal, like, can we get over it? It's just it's figurative. It doesn't mean that he wants to actually choke you or you should be choking someone. It's a figurative. It's a gesture, you know. Far less offensive than, like, a middle finger. If he just started doling out birds to everyone, it'd be like, whoa, that's a little intense. But, you know, the guy made one of the biggest plays on one of the biggest stages in one of the biggest games to get to the biggest game of the year. And he's an emotional guy. And it was just, as soon as I saw him in that interview with Aaron Andrews, I laughed. It was legitimately like a old school WWF pre-fight, pre-match interview with Mean Gene Okerlund. It was old school intensity, you know, Macho Man, Ultimate Warrior style. I mean, he was pumped up, and I would much rather, 10 times out of 10, see something like that from a very talented, skilled player who obviously had beef with this guy before the game even started. I mean, this goes back before the game. It goes back to, you know, some charity event they were at, together, but much rather 10 times out of 10 see that than see, well, I played a good game out there, we had a lot of focus, and the whole canned response that all these guys give these days that make me sick. And then for Erin Andrews to respond the way she does, she's getting a lot of criticism for her response. And there was actually another Fox Sports reporter who chimed in and said, I'd be petrified like Erin Andrews too. You know what? You don't belong on the sidelines. You don't belong on the sidelines then. If you can't handle a grown man, an NFL player, saying, I'm the best, and you can't talk in that way about me, then you don't belong on the sidelines. I'm sorry. You're just not ready for that kind of action. I mean, you know, I understand why someone like Erin Andrews has the job she does. I think we all do. I mean, most of us view her as kind of, it's just like, it's filler. It's just filler. Some people might say a joke. You know, and that might sound harsh, but, like, let's get serious. You had the opportunity of a lifetime in the palm of your hand, and you're sitting there making faces like either you're petrified. I can understand surprise to a certain extent, but you got to love that. The guy just won them the game, and he's going nuts. And he's not swearing or anything like that. He's just—he's very vocal, and he took on the persona of a wrestler. I mean, that is like amazing. I was loving it, and I was really disappointed in the way that Erin handled it, and the way that Fox Sports handled it, and cutting away from it. I mean, that is like gold right there. And it just—it to me that indicates that was an indication when they cut away that A, they didn't really trust Erin Andrews to handle it. Or B, they were worried that Richard Sherman, a Stanford graduate, was going to do something that they didn't want to have on camera. It just, yeah. Oh, my God.
I can't agree with you more in the fact that it was a missed opportunity. Like, her follow-up question was almost basically saying, you weren't supposed to say that. Like, we do these on-field interviews because the fans and the, you know, everyone demands we got to get instant access to it. But they all still expect the canned answer. And basically she's like, well, who was saying that to you? You could listen to what he was saying, and you know he's talking to Michael Crabtree. And in the first time in my life, I was thinking to myself, man, I wish Tony Siragusa was there. I mean, he's a bumbling idiot, and he's a sideline guy. Like, imagine if Tony Siragusa was there. That would have been as interesting of an on-field interview that's ever happened, ever. Whether you agree with what he said or not, that would have actually been interesting. And my thing is, the people that are very anti what he said, and I get why people are upset about it, but you don't know anything about Richard Sherman, because he's been running his mouth to Darrell Revis and to Skip Bayless and whoever will listen to any interview. Yeah, Tom Brady, you mad bro? That's where the you mad bro thing comes from. You know, it really made it famous. The idea that like this instant now makes you, I was gonna root for the Seahawks, but now I won't. You're like, well, then you don't follow football because you don't know who Richard Sherman is. So if you were already didn't like Richard Sherman, that instance shouldn't have changed your opinion about Richard Sherman. I was already a fan of his. You know, I don't have a problem with it. And this idea that, like, he's doing it because he's insecure, a comment I made on another person's thread, it wasn't on our Facebook page, but, you know, I said there's two types of trash talkers. There's the trash talker that does it because they're insecure, like, or Danny Valdespin, or one of those guys that doesn't really have the talent, but trash talks to kind of like prove to themselves. And then there's the trash talker that does it to take their opponent out, like Reggie Miller used to do. And you could ask anybody. I mean, he did a 30 and 30 on Reggie Miller, and that was like a part of his game. And whether or not it's effective or not, I honestly think if he didn't have that aspect to himself, he wouldn't be the player that he is. And you could say, why does he have to do that to be a good player? I don't know, but he does have to do it. He does have to do it. I don't think he would be the same player if he didn't do that type of thing.
All I said was, I used the word unnecessary. Dictionary definition of it was, it wasn't necessary. I didn't think it was necessary that he did it. But the problem I had was when there was this segment of society that was an apparent pre-rant Sherman fan that's no longer a fan. And I can honestly say, and I remember the kid from college. I know him, watch him in the pros. He's a great player. I like him. I like that he's an articulate guy and he puts his thoughts into things and he has a lot of stuff to say. I just thought what happened was Sherman said all this stuff and, oh, by the way, he made a phenomenal play on that ball, Kaepernick and Crabtree. When, to me, if you didn't say the stuff you said, people would go, my God. My argument that you and I texted about was people would say it for you.
Yeah, they would have.
They would have told the world how great you are. who people who didn't already know. But that being said, I don't have a problem with it. I didn't lose any sleep over it. I still like Richard Sherman. I wasn't rooting for Seattle because I can't stand Pete Carroll. It wouldn't have mattered if they were playing, I was telling our buddy Rich from Huntington last night, it wouldn't matter if they were playing the Packers.
Yeah.
And I'm not being funny. That's how much I dislike Pete Carroll getting away with bloody murder. So it was unnecessary. I don't think he had to do it. Do I think he's less of a man? But I think it takes away from the work he apparently does in the Seattle community and in his community down in Los Angeles and Compton? No.
Yeah.
It doesn't change him to me at all, but it's like, dude, you didn't do that. We all know you're great.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell me. I knew before the game.
I think that my problem is that people think it was like a fake.
Right, sort of, right.
And it was clearly not. And I think that his apology was a good apology because he didn't apologize for his emotions.
Which was funny to me.
Yeah, which was great. Because this guy, I mean, everybody, like, for some reason, Crabtree gets his pass. This guy was running his mouth not only on the field, but apparently, like, off the field when they saw each other. And to me, that's like you've opened yourself up to this. And I think that he is just – that emotion was just still going. He doesn't have a switch. You could just turn it off.
But what do you think of that trash talk between he and Crabtree? Had that been a storyline all week, had it been brought to everyone's attention.
Yeah.
And then Sherman did what he did. So that's one of the first things I thought about after the backlash. I said, this wouldn't even be really an issue. I didn't know those two were trash talking.
Yeah, no, I didn't know.
I
totally
had no
pushed him in the face and he saw
it. Had it been a story?
Yeah.
And then the minute that microphone hit Sherman's face,
they would have been like, wait.
They would have been like, holy smoke, this guy's going to say something unbelievable.
Yeah.
Which then we would have said, he did. Look, he did.
So I watched most of that game on my iPad, because typically at night we'll watch some Disney movies or whatever. So I watched on my iPad with the sound off, and it happened to be like my daughter goes to bed and everything, and I turn it on for like the last maybe 8 minutes of the game, like real minutes, not game minutes, you know, the game, 8-10 minutes of the game. And then I saw it, like it was just one of those moments where like there's very few moments in sports where you get an interview where it just like blows you away. Like I did not, even though I know Richard Sherman, when he said that, I laughed out loud. I was like, just like... Like, you know, and the idea, like, oh, well, what about the kids? John Madden was on today on Mad Dog Radio talking about, well, I know I got grandkids that, you know, want to emulate these guys, and what do I say to that? You tell them, you know, like I said in my article, like, that you don't just emulate a guy with all of his flaws and all of his weak, you know, you know what you say to him? This guy has a lot of good qualities. So, guy came out of Compton, went to Stanford. Like I said in my article, after the game, he didn't go out partying. He didn't see him in the police squad. He only wrote an article. Like, that's what this guy's like mindset is. He's all about football. He apologized on behalf of the team. He did give his LOB shout-out, talking about the secondary.
Yep.
And then he went out and said, you know, my biggest regret is that I took attention away from, you know, my teammates who played a great game. You know, again, I wouldn't want my son or daughter to do what he did. There's not one person in the world where you want him anyway. Who do you want to anyway? Derek Jeter, because he does all the right things? Well, he goes out. He's a 38-year-old bachelor who goes out and has sex with millions of people. Do I want my son to do that? Do I want my daughter to do that? Either. You know, like, there's not one person where you said, emulate every single thing this person does.
No, I agree with you to an extent, but I also disagree in that there's going to be times where people's kids, and I'm not a parent, so I don't sit on the high horse telling people how to do things, but there's going to be times where your daughter or this guy's son or, you know, whatever, are by themselves. They're 8, 9, 10, 15 years old, impressionable, whatever, and they see things like this. And the only thing I'm saying is there is this idea out there, this stigma that this is how these African-American players act.
Yeah.
And that's not true, and you just said it. Look what Sherman does off the field.
Yeah.
He is not the prototypical anything. And in fact, he breaks molds. And all I'm saying is he could send a message to those kids out there that do look up to him, that might not have a father figure or anything like that, and say, you can be humble. You can be unbelievably great at what you do, which he clearly is. No one disputes that. Maybe Crabtree, I don't know. But none of us sit here and say he's not great.
I defended him when he battled on
Twitter
with
Right. All I'm saying is he could have just said, see that play? That's how we do things in Seattle. And made it funny, you know, something about Crabtree. But I understand he's in the heat of the moment. And football is a game that's beyond me, so he's probably all geeked up.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's like at that level. So.
No.
But I don't have a problem with it. I don't dislike the guy, but I'm baffled by the people that say they liked him and now no longer.
That's
stupid.
That is so
because
stupid.
I liked him before. I still like him. I just thought
he disagree with someone that does. Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. I don't disagree with the critics. You say that now you change your pick. All right. Well, next week we'll get into our Super Bowl picks. We'll try to muscle our way through the next week of sports, which is going to be brutal. You're going to hear a million different Super Bowl storylines over and over and over. But another great Due to You series from Neil. Appreciate that, Neil. Hopefully, I have Tony D back in studio. Hopefully, everything with Matty Scully is on the mend, and we get him back. We get a couple good guests on next week.
Check us out as always, tristatesportsguys.com, facebook.com/tristatesportsguys, or on Twitter at tristate_sports. Danny's got a good hockey article up. We'll be adding new stuff every day. So check us out every week, Wednesdays, 8 to 10 o'clock with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Thanks for listening.
Hello.